Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb as white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said nada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
Well, we celebrate the memory. I'm sorry. I got high sound coming out. I'm sorry. I worked that out. We got a... It's Valentine's Day. That's right here today in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And it's Valentine's Day all over the country, where most of you guys will spend your hard-earned money or another girl's hard-earned money on another girl. Yeah, because there are guys who do that. There are some guys who won't even bother to do anything, like, you know, to say something like, I forgot, or they're working late. There will be some guys tonight that will take their women out to dinner. There's some guys who will be bringing home chocolate and candy and all those other things. There are some guys out there who are going to propose. They're going to propose to their significant others for the first time, and they'll go off to some spa and get a spa treatment. They'll do something romantic. They will. They will all go out and celebrate the execution of St. Valentine. They will all do that. But not I. Not I. I gave up on Valentine's Day when I was somewhere around 12 years old. I gave up on it hardcore. Stone cold turkey. Gave up on it. Now, many may believe that's probably because I had a horrible childhood or some woman scorned me. Well, you'd be right, damn it. You'd be right. Her name was Pamela. I'll never forget it. She pretended to like me. She thought I was the bee's knees until cute old Gregory came into our class. I was no more. And Valentine's Day means nothing to me. Never has, never will. That whole thing is over. But I got swayed. I have been swayed into falling into the Valentine's Day trap. I was dragged into the whole farce that is Valentine's Day. And how did it happen? Well, it was simple. I was dating a girl who I affectionately referred to as Boogie. We'll just leave it at that. That was her nickname. I called her Boogie. She called me plenty of names, trust me. But Boogie was her nickname. And when Boogie and I got together and we were involved, it was a tumultuous relationship. It was here, it was there, went a lot of places. But we started living together, and when we started taking our relationship seriously, she said, Reese, or the nickname she would always refer to me, and said, I need to celebrate Valentine's Day this year. It's important to me. And she started telling me all these horrible stories about Valentine's Day. About this one Valentine's Day she spent with a boyfriend that ended up with a bottle of Jack and on the hood of a car. I won't get into it. That's how it happened. Her story, not mine. And she just said that, you know, all of her other Valentines were just horrible. So she wore me down with this sob story. So I gave in. I got sucked in, like a succubus is supposed to do. So I had a condition. I said, you know what, Boogie, I'll do it. I'll give in to this farce. But you got to let me do it my way. So she was a little apprehensive. What do you mean your way? I'm expecting this to be romantic. It's Valentine's Day. You're kind of a jokester. You're a prankster. Am I going to open up a box of candy and there's going to be asparagus in it? You know, is there going to be like a dancing midget? Like, what are you going to do? You're telling me you want to do it your way. You're a practical joker. You like to have fun at people's expenses. What are you going to do? I said, listen, I will make it romantic. But you got to let me do it my way. Can you accept it? So finally she gave up. She said, okay, fine. You can do it your way. So I did. Never forget it. Much a day like today. It's kind of cool out, not too cold. Went down to the florist, picked out a big arrangement, dozen roses, baby's breath, the whole nine yards, big giant thing. Put in a box with a big red bow. Went and got a card. A nice size card. Not the big, gigantic, over the top, I'm still in high school in Puerto Rican card. I got one of those mediocre cards. Maybe, but you know, like 8x10. I got one of those cards and I slipped it in with the box. And I went and got a stuffed animal. And nothing big. Nothing big, nothing large. I would say it was probably just about the size of the card, maybe a little larger. So I sent everything, delivery and all. Did it. I mean, you know, did what I was supposed to do. As a man. As a romantic man. So I go back to my office. I went and did it on my lunch break. I'm sitting in my office on 31st Street and 5th Avenue. Phone rings. And one of my subordinates, I think it was a Puerto Rican, he says to me, "Hey, yo, Reese, you got a call." So usually when Reese gets a call, it's Reese, it's the Buffalo office. Reese, it's San Francisco office. Reese, it's the Sacramento office. Reese, it's the St. Louis office. This one just said, "Reese, you got a call," so I knew it was personal. So I knew what I was going to get on the other end. I knew I was going to get Boogie on the other side of that phone. So I pick up the phone and I say, "Hello, this is Reese." And there is tremendous laughter on the other side of the phone. She is laughing her behind off behind this gift. And so I said, "So you like it?" She goes, "This is so funny. This is hilarious. I can't. Oh, I should have trusted you when you said that you were going to do it your way. This is so sweet. You are going to get so lucky when you get home tonight." Yes, nailed it. I was happy. Maybe this Valentine thing isn't all that bad. If I can do it my way and she can appreciate it, hip diddy hoot ha, whatever they say, whatever that is. But I feel good about it. I'll do it again next year. So, again, it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I work until 6:30 because I work long hours. And I come on home and I'm excited. Hey, maybe get home and get a little lucky. Little payoff. I walk in the door. Boogie's in front of the television, eating bonbons with a look on her face of disgust. And I'm checking myself. You know, I ain't got no biddies on the side. I didn't, you know, we didn't get a phone bill from a 900 number. She didn't catch me calling sex lines or something weird like that. She didn't find my secret porn stash. No, I'm kidding. She didn't find any of that. I'm figuring, why does she have such a puss on her face? So I'm still in a happy mood. Hey, baby, mwah, 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 giving nice little kisses on the cheek. Hey. Well, hey, what's going on? I see the flowers. They're sitting off in this chair. And I see the teddy bear in the car. They're sitting off. She's got a sourpuss going on. What the hell's going on? What's up? I thought you were happy. I thought this was supposed to be our romantic night together. I did the whole Valentine thing. What's going on? Yeah, but, it's the card. What? The card is why you were laughing. The card's hilarious, right? I mean, that's why you were laughing. She's like, yeah, I know. I said, whoa. What do you mean, yeah, you know? When I called you, you said you were happy about the roses. You were happy about the teddy bear. You laughing about the card. That was my little angle, was the Valentine's Day card. You were laughing. You were howling over the phone. It's like the funniest comedy you ever heard in your entire life. Yeah, I know. But I showed it to Susan. Now, let me give you some background here. Susan Freck. Everybody's got one. You do too. If you're a guy, there's a Susan Freck in your life, if you got a girl. You see, when Boogie called me at my office, Susan Freck was sitting behind her desk and heard Boogie laughing about the card and inadvertently said, oh, let me see it. It's so funny. And saw the card and went, oh. That's from somebody who loves you? And then started getting into Boogie's head while I'm sitting at work, getting ready, doing push-ups, getting ready to come home and do work, get the job done. Susan Freck is picking apart my Valentine's Day. Susan said that if you really loved me, you wouldn't have written that on the card. It's just a joke, sweetheart. It's just me. You were laughing. I don't get it. It's like you read it. You thought it was funny. I said I was going to do it my way. I kind of made a joke, but I did the whole gesture with the flowers I did all of it. Why? I don't understand. What's going on? I don't know. It's just I'm thinking about whether or not you take me seriously or you really, really care about me. Would you write something like that? So I can only imagine you want to know what was on the card. Mary?
I would love to know what was on the card.
JC, would you like to know what was on the card?
Absolutely, I can only imagine.
So the front of the card had a big, giant pink rose. And underneath it, it said, written in the card, without you. When she opened up the card, on the inside it read, I'd have to pay full rent. That's what I wrote. Because we were living together in our apartment, and so she wanted me to say something romantic, and I wrote, without you, I'd have to pay full rent. Which I thought was funny. That's the only thing I did.
You can't cross love and sense of humor.
Yes, you can, JC. Stop it.
The two don't mix. Not with women. Women don't think that way. Especially if they got a friend named, what's her name? What's her friend's name?
Susan Freck, dude. Everybody's got a Susan Freck.
Who probably doesn't have a man.
Wrong. She did. She had a boyfriend who she ended up marrying and then cheating on and getting divorced. But that wasn't my first time with Susan Freck. Susan Freck, by the way, she's a chapter of my book, which I'm writing, called Want to Make God Laugh, Make Plans. Inside that book, Susan Freck, I had two very distinct instances with Susan Freck. Here's another great story. Susan Freck gets invited to our apartment for dinner one night. And I used to have this silly little line that, I used to say, what a guy say, hey, how do you like your coffee? And guys go, like my women, light and sweet. Or like my women, black, no sugar. So I had this little line where I used to say, like my women, like my women, and then that would be the thing. So every guy has that. So Susan's over for dinner, and Boogie asked me in the middle of, while she's making dinner, we're all there making dinner together, Boogie says, Reese, how do you want me to fix the pasta? So I said, I don't like my women wet and loose. I don't know why, just why I said it, but I was kidding. She laughs. I walk out to go get a bottle of wine. What do you expect? Susan Frick!
If he loved you, he wouldn't say stuff like that. If he cared about you, he wouldn't say things like that. Why is he that? He said wet and loose. What's he trying to say? Is he saying that you're not loose? What is he trying to say? Is that the type of women that he likes? It's just a joke. But Susan Frick would always turn it into something else, that I was inadvertently or in some sort of way trying to take a stab at Boogie about something. And Boogie would laugh, and then Susan Frick would get into her head, and that's what would happen. Every frickin' time. Every time.
Question.
Go for it.
Did it ever occur to you that Susan Frick wanted you?
No, hell no. She looked like an ugly Sandy Duncan. Now, I would never ever. And that's a nice thing, because I think Sandy.
I just ate, dude.
What'd you say,
Jason? I just ate. But that's why I don't celebrate Valentine's Day, because I can't do it my way. It can't be this lovey dovey, huggy, kissy, romantic thing. I don't do the romance thing. I don't. I try. I always fail. I've done it before. I fixed the dinner. I've done that. It's all ended horribly.
But you wanted to do it your way and throw in a little comedy.
But yes, because I wanted to make it a fun thing. I wanted to make it a couple, I wanted to make it a great sort of night for not just her, but for me. I get to throw a little bit of, like, you know, a little Comedy Central in the game.
Comedy Central and Young and the Restless do not meet.
Yeah, but you know what? That's it. Mary just said it succinctly. It's just that I was trying to. What was I trying to? What did you say? That was.
He was trying not to be so vulnerable.
Yeah, he's trying not to be vulnerable. You can't always be vulnerable to your woman. You can't do it. And that's what Valentine's Day is built for. It's built to break the guy down.
Valentine's Day is built for women to get things at their jobs, primarily to say, look what my man got for me.
So it's
look.
To show off.
Yeah.
What do you guys need to show off for?
Because
it's to get that gift they didn't get for Christmas.
What? Flowers and
that bracelet that they wanted for Christmas. That anklet. That ring.
I'm not
you
doing
should,
it.
You should shower your loved one with love every single day. It shouldn't be one in particular day that you do more things than you would on any other regular
It is day. A Hallmark holiday, JC, and you know it. It's a Hallmark
but
holiday.
Regardless,
of course.
It's a Hallmark holiday. The point is, women like this stuff. So, wait a minute. So, if she happens to and that woman is doing everything that she can to go above and beyond to please her man, then her man should put his differences with the holiday aside and do what he can just because he knows that that's what she likes. Sometimes we have to sacrifice.
I do not believe that I should be held hostage for a woman's insecurity. And that's what I believe is being done.
To a degree.
But see, I'm the romantic type. I am the romantic type. And I'd be the first to admit that, although Robin would disagree.
What did your woman today, JC?
What's that?
What did your woman get today?
Absolutely nothing. I don't have a woman.
Yeah, you do. What?
No, I don't.
I got to be honest, JC, I completely forgot. Somebody had to remind me today.
Really?
To me, it was Tuesday. I just don't go around. I mean, seriously, it's not me. Me recognizing Valentine's Day is like me recognizing Flag Day.
You know what Flag Day is.
Okay, Alex, that's not fair.
And Mary, you're partially right.
Jason.
You're partially right there, Mary. I did. I mean, it had happened today, but I sent her a webcam.
Oh, that's so sweet and pathetic.
But that was for me.
You are so ridiculous.
No, but that was for me.
Yeah, that was for you, so that you could. Yeah, I know.
You sent her a webcam. Oh, so you could see her.
Right.
nice, though. That's like, you know, sending somebody just a gift. You didn't have to throw,
well, I
you
mean,
know.
It was a gift, and it wasn't necessarily for Valentine's Day. But on the same token, we're 400 miles apart.
Jeez, 400
I'm
miles.
I'm not moving up there. She's not moving down here. And the next time we'll see each other would be either at my Oldie But Goodie dance or at my son's wedding. And that's the next time we plan on seeing each other. But even then, I don't know that I'm ready to commit to a relationship after coming out of a very long relationship.
Understood.
I mean, I've been paroled for 4 years, and I'm enjoying my single life thoroughly.
I can understand that.
And I don't know that I want to jump into that type of commitment just yet. I mean, don't get it twisted. I love the ground that this chick walks on. It took me 15 years to find her again. And it's a long love. It's a long, long, long love story. But
well, at least it's a love story. I haven't had a love story in a long time, so Not that I'm going to say that it's not great that people still have love stories. I'm just going to say that I haven't seen one in a long time. I guess they still happen, but maybe that's just me being cynical.
Basically.
And then they turn around and they get Mother's Day.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, but wait a minute.
Isn't it enough?
What about those of us that don't have any kids? I don't get a Mother's Day.
That's true.
Well,
okay,
and that's true. You're right, though. But we're talking about the majority.
Valentine's Day?
Okay, you're right. But that's true. Hold on. That's right. If you don't get Valentine's, but then if that's the case, well, no, then for mothers, they've got to get Valentine gifts too, so they get double. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. So.
Oh, no. And then I discovered white folks give gifts on Easter.
We don't give gifts on Easter?
Yes, I'm not sure we white folks give gifts on Easter.
I've been giving gifts for the last 20 years of my relationship on Easter.
I mean, I've seen some, you know, the egg roll and
no,
Easter.
No. We're talking actual gifts. It was like Christmas all over again.
You've been duped.
And I'm like, what is this?
So you've been duped. That's one of my favorite words. You've been duped. I think you got duped.
This is absolutely bananas.
Robin, why'd you do that to the man?
Yeah, who set him up? That's just bad. But anyway,
Robin, her whole family.
I'm just declaring Valentine's Day over and done with.
I was done with Valentine's Day when I was 18. I got soured on Valentine's Day real early.
Yeah, but you
very
know,
early.
I'm sick and tired of people calling us bitter for no longer wanting to celebrate it.
But I don't think that it's bitter. I think it's laziness. It's an
excuse. It's not about...
It's nothing to do with laziness, because now you can order Valentine's online.
Yeah, exactly.
It has nothing to do with laziness.
There you go. Okay, very good point, JC. You can order Valentine's online. You don't have to lift a finger.
But you still have to think about...
I'm a thinker. How would I be lazy about thinking?
You have to think about the other person. You may have to put that other person.
That's then you're talking about inconsideration, and that is for me. I'm not inconsiderate. It's not about being inconsiderate. And sometimes I'll admit I could be a little absent-minded, you know. But you know, Valentine's Day isn't one of those things that I think you have to have. I know that women are going to be upset about this. Okay, so let me be the first to say it. If you are crying and heartbroken because you did not receive a Valentine's gift this year, okay? I have to be honest with you. It isn't the end of the world. I apologize that whoever the guy was didn't acknowledge it and probably wasn't considerate enough to get you the gift. But truth be told, you'll get over it. Please.
It's not the rapture.
It's not, yeah, exactly. It's not the end of the world. So many women turn it into that. So many. And,
could you imagine? You know what's going to happen tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can assure you, somewhere there's a statistic that states or shows that tonight there will be more ass whoopings. No. I'm dead serious.
When you say ass whippings, what do you mean by ass whippings? You mean like women? Oh,
you didn't give me a gift. You didn't give me a gift. Who did you give the gift to?
You're probably
right. I forgot about Valentine's Day. I'm sorry. I forgot. I want to hear that mess.
But you're talking right, and Mary said it right. It's more of a tongue lashing than anything. So that's what
tongue lashing. No. Because you women don't know when to stop.
Women do not know when to stop. And I'll be honest with you. See, I don't want to be the kind of guy that buys a Valentine's gift just so he doesn't have to hear her mouth. I'm not going to be that guy.
Well, sometimes it's worth it. it's worth it.
I'd rather hear your mouth. Go ahead and beef. I'll turn that into an argument any day.
Yeah. No, sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it's worth it just to shut him up.
But you know what, though? It's like you guys are so I don't get it. Listen.
What day do you set aside to do something special for us?
Excuse me?
Yeah,
I do something special if I'm
every day. Every day.
Something special every day.
Well, sometimes we don't want saltines. We want a Ritz day.
Every day with Mary, why are you bugging? It's a Ritz day, boo. There's no Super 8 here. Ritz
You claim that because I don't know you that well. But
you don't have to. I'll come with references.
I don't believe it.
No, ain't no way in hell. She is not Superwoman.
Some women claim to be Superwoman, but I agree with you, JC. I think sometimes it's a farce. But
yeah.
All right. When we come back, story of news I thought was really really funny because it associated with a conversation that we had a week ago about how girls deal with coaches in the sports world.
Oh, fuck.
And we have a clear example about some kids couldn't take some harsh criticism. Wait till you find out what sport it was.
Well, I don't really think it's a sport, but you'll
first
get my meaning.
First we want to bash Valentine's Day. Now we have to talk about this again?
Yeah, we're back there again. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll be back. Stick around.
Someone help me.
What are you prepared to do? Everything within the law.
And then what are you prepared to do? If you open the ball on these people, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
I don't know how to get him.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. Now, do you want to do that? Are you ready to do that?
I wish Black History Month was over already. And I don't mean over at the end of the month. I wish Black History Month was over for all time. I know. I just spoke heresy in the eyes of liberals and Afrocentrics. I don't care. And I can hear them now accusing me of making a statement I made so I can get approval and acknowledgement from white folks. Really? Aren't you the ones who demand to have a month set aside so white folks can acknowledge you? You're the ones desperate for recognition from white folks. You want these white Democrats to give you reparations and affirmative action and whatnot. I don't need any of these things you demand from white folks. I don't need a feel-good month set aside for me. I'm happy about being black all year long. I celebrate being an American all year long. I don't need a month set aside for me to boost my self-esteem. As the saying goes, Jesus already thinks I'm to die for. Why would I celebrate Black History Month when it would be racist to have a White History Month? I mean, to be fair, American history is pretty much taught to us as white history. So we really don't need a White History Month. But the reason why we don't know that much about black history is because the school system is dominated by the Democrat Party, who has a history of segregating black people. So it only makes sense that they would segregate a month for black people. And in this special month, Democrats oversee what you know about black history. And one thing they don't want you to know about is the true relationship of blacks and Republicans and blacks as Republicans. Along with Black History Month, I do not like having channels like BET, when it would be seen as racist to have WET. But again, to be fair, television has always been white entertainment television. Hollywood is totally racist, and they're dependent on keeping people in a certain box so as to maintain their entertainment formula. White liberal mecca Comedy Central calls themselves throwing black folks a bone with their new comedy show called Key and Peele. Now, I get called a sellout while Key and Peele happily take money to promote the so-called black stereotype on Comedy Central. Look, y'all, I totally understand that we have some cultural differences, and it's a beautiful thing about our country worth celebrating. But giving a culture special treatment leads to resentment, not celebration. Y'all, there are many black heroes to celebrate in American history. I'm not saying you shouldn't acknowledge and learn about them. I'm saying that the black community has settled for a month as if it were a tribal reservation on a calendar. Or even worse, it's a February plantation where the Democrats milk their stock for voter loyalty. I'm Alfonso Rachel for Zone Nation, where we conservative blacks don't celebrate black history once a year. We make American history every day.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul, Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
What's up, guys? We're back at 3 Soda Radio right here on BlogTalkRadio.com. Last 3 Soda Radio. The number is 347-308-8701. Send us an email at 3SodaRadio@yahoo.com. I'm trying to remember this stuff. It's all on the top of my head. And you can also see us on Facebook. That's on the radio. And go to 3SodaRadio.com. I did it all, right? Okay, we're done. Anyway. A couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion. I think most of us were in agreement on this discussion. Maybe not
Mary.
You were not in agreement on this discussion. And it was about, if I remember, that a 7-year-old girl, a year older than her 6-year-old brother, of course, she was cut from a Little League baseball team because the league was about to become more competitive. And all the girls and some boys had been cut from the squad. Even though the mother claims that the coach says that the girl played better than the 6-year-old brother. Well, of course, she's older.
Oh,
and
yeah.
My argument was that the girls should have their own league to play. You don't see any little boys wanting to play on the girls' softball team, do you? No.
Well, of course not, because they're bred to not ever. If they did that, someone would think.
What are the girls doing to incorporate boys into their sports?
I don't know.
Yes, goose egg, donut, zero. That's a fact. No boy is out there screaming, going, Ma, but I want to play soccer with my sister and all of her girlfriends. I want to be on a, why won't they have boys on the girls' soccer team? I think that's sexist.
But then it is sexist. But then the parents would be thinking, what's wrong with this little boy?
So it's a societal thing, right?
It is.
What I'm saying is that why do you have girls' sports if you're going to, I mean, why have girls' sports if the main objective is to compete with boys? Do girls really want to compete with boys so bad that they have to be a part of their team?
Some girls.
Oh, come on. That's ridiculous. Then it's a joke. But here's what I'm saying. I said the reason why the girls could not deal with the rigors of being a part of a boys' team is that to a boy, you can be a little rougher and gruffer. You can say things to a boy. Tommy, what are you doing? You can't pick up the ground ball? What's your problem? Can't say that to a little girl. Little girl loses her crap. You yell at her and you tell her she needs to get her act together. Well, you didn't hit off the cutoff man? Why are you not blocking him? What's your problem? I thought I taught you that. Come on, you know this by now. Girls get a little sensitive, can't take it. And now I have proof. Look at me. Good old Reese with the proof. And sometimes I don't have to write these stories. The stories just show up. And that's what I love about it. This coach is from a very, very famous sport. And what's great about it is that the coach is a female talking to females. And because of this speech, that female coach got fired. You tell me whether or not it was too harsh.
You might have the effect on the team. And you're going to give me that?
Think about what I have to say. called them a bunch of heifers. And here's what happened. Just to give you a perfect example. Highfalutin heifers. She called them a bunch of highfalutin heifers.
Chrissy.
It gets worse. Exactly. It gets worse than that. The girls came home from cheerleading practice. That's what that was.
I know.
Came home from cheerleading practice crying and told her dad, "Dad, she's mean to us." So dad armed her with a tape recorder at cheerleading practice.
Now she did sound a little angry, though.
So what? She didn't curse at them.
But it sounded more like...
The only thing they cared about is...
She was scorned.
No, she was upset that the girls weren't putting in effort. You're cheerleading. You just got to look. She said, what did she say about JC? What did she say about the pyramid and the mortgage? She said something along that line.
You guys don't have a mortgage.
Yeah, you guys don't have a mortgage. In other words, you're not permanently staying here, I guess. But the bottom line is that this woman is a coach. She didn't curse them out. All
she called them a bunch of heifers.
Highfalutin heifers. Hold on. That's the worst.
Heifers.
What if a male coach calls them slackers? You're a bunch of slackers.
Slackers and heifers, two different things.
Come on, we know them cheerleaders were what? I mean, them girls are a size minus two.
But
they're cheerleaders.
Okay, then that's fine. But you still can't go around calling a bunch of underage kids heifers.
A heifer. A highfalutin heifer.
Why not? Because there's rules and regulations to follow.
Hey,
there's no rules and regulations.
Yes, there are rules and regulations. I can't go around calling my boss a heifer.
Wait. How about this?
I would be
I'm
quiet.
The physical fitness teacher at a junior high school, and I got an overweight kid who can't keep up with the rest of the group running. What do I tell him? Yeah, I got to tell him, come on, keep up. This is the reason why you're slow. You got to lose some of that weight. Tubby.
No, you can't say
why
that.
Why can't I?
Because you can't.
I can't call him Tubby?
Because you cannot do that.
Why not? Tubby's an offensive word?
He may go home and kill himself.
Oh, really? The kids are that weak now.
Yes, they are.
So they're kind of that weak, Doris. That I'll give you because... That right there, I mean, Tubby, that's sort of a form of bullying.
Okay, fine. Fat boy?
But if you call him Slim,
it's harassing.
Slim as a reminder of where he needs to be.
Chubsy Upsy?
I think that's a little more encouraging. Come on, Slim.
Biggie Draws? I can't call him Biggie Draws. Come on, Biggie Draws. Let's keep it moving. I don't know what I'm supposed to say in order to get these kids motivated.
You're supposed to say, okay, I understand that you can't run as fast as the rest of them, but we're going to get you to that
we're
point.
Going
so let
to
me
coddle
run.
This boy?
No.
Where's
you're
the coddle
coddling.
Kid?
No. You're
what are you
coddling.
Saying?
Come on, if you have a fat kid and a bunch of thin kids, of course the fat kid can't go as fast as the rest of the kids.
So what do? I have to spend special time on Chubby?
Maybe.
I didn't get no special time.
Come on. Hey, Notorious P.I.G., let's keep it moving. What's
Notorious
going on?
Notorious P.I.G.
What's going on with you?
I mean, oh my, you guys are ridiculous. I knew. I don't even, it's like, I
you give him a name like Flounder?
Yes.
I should have taken a break.
FG.
We always got nicknames. I told you a long time ago. When I was a kid, my name was Moose.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you guys what they were because I was scarred by those nicknames as a kid.
Yeah, well, again,
well,
I don't
you're want... a girl.
Wait. So if you're scarred by it, fine. If you're scarred by it, seriously.
You just proved the point.
Exactly. Why didn't you kill yourself?
Because I'm not that damn weak.
Okay, so how are we to say that this kid is that weak?
How are you to say that he's not?
We can't. Oh,
okay.
We can't.
On the same token, Mary, you were scarred by that. It goes to show that being a female... You can't take it.
That's right.
JC, you cannot tell me.
I think
that
he's made.
None
I
of
think
those,
he's made a valid
no,
point.
No, wait a minute, JC. You cannot tell me that none of those things that happened to you when you were a kid, or anything that's ever happened to you, because
the only one, I can be totally honest with you.
Okay.
I will be totally honest with you.
Tell me that.
The only person that was ever able to verbally hurt me was my father.
Look at that. not his coach, not some kid at school. Now, the kids at school were cruel to me. Come
you,
on.
Listen. Being a big kid, first of all,
right?
You need to have thick skin.
Yeah.
And two, along with that fat comes the funny.
If you can find
yeah,
a way.
But then you're being funny to get away from every at your own expense. That's what
No. You'd be able to fire back.
Yeah, exactly. You can fire back.
You'd be able to fire back.
That's what I learned to do.
Not for being fat.
Well,
in my house, I mean, and we have a lot of tubby chubbies in my house, and my family, I should say, but we sit around when we get together, especially at holidays and barbecues, and we rank something off. When I don't mean smell, I mean rank the dozens, and we do it all day long.
Yeah, you can't have.
And that's the
kind
of family I grew up in, so I kind of grew up with a thick skin. I was always the class clown.
When
I used to get the fat jokes, I always passed them right back.
You see, the thing is that what I learned about that when I was bullied as a kid, when I was bullied as a kid, and when kids used to make fun of me, when I learned how to snap back, when I learned how to do the dozens back,
yeah.
I would always tell them afterwards when I really, really stepped up my game, when I learned how to be very quick-witted.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those kids, I had to warn them. I was like, okay. I just want to make sure you understand. I'll let you crack your jokes, but if I get dirty, if I get vicious, I don't want to hear anything about how you want to fight and shoot people. I want you to be able. Don't start with me. Are you prepared for this? That's what I tell them each and every time. You go there, I will get vicious. I play no rules, okay? I will go after your mother, your dead grandmother, your dead great-grandmother. I will violate them. Just be prepared. If you step in my realm, you are asking me to violate you. That's what these kids got to learn. Come on. I almost got shot one day for talking about this guy. Turned around and he said, the guy said, F your mother. I said, oh, no, that's all right, dude. My mother is a whore. But let's talk about the filthy tramp that is your mother. He had to pull out a gun on me. Didn't even think I'd go there. You know, and he didn't even think that I would accept, yes, my mother is a whore. Yeah, we got that. But let's talk about the whore that is your mom's. Let's talk about the filthy things she does. A good deal. That's what these kids need to learn. You don't like it, take it. But these girls aren't going to be able to do it because girls
are soft and cuddly. That's who they are.
And pink.
That's right. Soft, cuddly, and pink. That's who they are. That's who they're supposed to be. They cannot take ridicule.
That is why all they do is kick the ball when it comes in their direction.
That's right. You are dainty like a flower. Stay that way.
You're delicate.
Yes, exactly. Delicate. Like petals.
That's just my point. Come on, I want to play Homegirl again. Where's her audio?
Turn the volume down a little bit. You got a little high.
Oh, is it okay?
Yeah.
You might have the effect on the team. And you're going to give me that? Why don't you think about something? I don't like the way you're cheering. Why don't we do it this way? You don't have a mortgage. You get away with crap.
And they went home and cried. Instead of thinking about what she had to say, they went home and cried. Daddy, she was mean to me. She didn't beat you.
I don't
you.
Like that's this pyramid.
But those girls are that way because their parents coddled them.
Oh, really?
There's
yes,
a problem.
Really.
Oh, thank you, Jay. That's my point. So that's the problem.
If you are coddled, then you can't deal with certain things.
So why don't they
but
teach their kids
coddled,
to toughen up?
They
want their
should.
Kids to be a part of everything, but they don't
you
want their kids to be
should,
tough.
You should teach your kids to be tough. You should teach your kids to have a thick
I'm
skin.
I'm so glad you brought that
because
up.
Because if you don't, then they can't survive.
I'm so glad you brought that
as
up.
As an adult or as a child.
I'm so glad you brought that up. JC, can you send me a link to the video of the young Asian boy who was outside in his underwear doing push-ups in the snow? In New York City.
Now, that's ridiculous.
His father had him outside doing it.
to teach him to be tough, to toughen him up. I'm almost certain we heard about that.
We
you and I heard about that.
It.
We talked about it together. No, we didn't talk about it. You and I were listening to that, exact same story, when a guy in New York took his son and put him outside and had him doing push-ups in the snow, push-ups and jumping jacks. And what was that kid doing? What was that little Asian boy doing? He was smiling and laughing while he was doing it. This is the reason why the Asians are beating us. This is the reason why they're beating us at everything. Because they aren't afraid of a little bit of pain here and there. They're not afraid of taking the risk and putting their lives on the line. Hey, for crying out loud, half of those people will kill themselves if they don't get the proper work condition. They're tougher than us. And you're right, Mary. That's right. Our kids are coddled by these helicopter mom and dads.
But by parents today, but not back in our day. I wasn't coddled. My mother never coddled me.
Well, I think it's sad. I think it's sad.
And maybe that's why I don't have any kids, because I'd probably be like...
Yeah, you probably would be a mess.
I wouldn't coddle. Never.
Yeah, that's what they say.
No.
Everybody says they wouldn't coddle.
I would never. Because I know the detriment that it would cause to that child, and
yeah,
I would never do that.
If there's one thing that I know that... I mean, of course you coddle them as babies, but you got to teach them to be a little tougher when they get older, is what I'm saying.
You don't have to be militant, but you have
I didn't say militant, but maybe
I'm not
there's...
I'm saying that you did say
No. I'm not saying military, but I will go as far as say a little military.
Yes.
Oh, really? You willing to go there?
Yeah.
Wow. I have to admit, I'm slightly impressed.
You have to, because if you don't, how are they going to be independent? How are they going to be on their own? How are they going to learn any type of responsibility and take responsibility for their own actions if you don't?
Maybe I have to do that.
If you do something that causes me to have to do that, then you deserve that.
I think kid don't want to act right. Get up on that pyramid, girl.
You ain't got no mortgage, I do.
The fat girl on top.
Yes, let's see how strong you skinny broads really are. Fat girl on top.
Laugh at her eating Cheetos, now you carry her weight.
Now you carry her weight, exactly. I'm saddened by this whole destruction anyway. All right, listen, let's take a break. When we come back at the top of the hour, yeah, I'm really disgusted by this guy. JC, you know who he is. The guy's name is Torre. He used to write for Rolling Stone or Spin Magazine. I don't know who this piece of garbage is.
He's on BET. He's on Centric. He's on every damn where.
Yeah, but he used to be a writer for a particular magazine. I think it's Spin, Rolling Stone, or one of those. Not that I care, because his opinion is garbage. And he's a loser. He's a piece of scum. That's what he is. I mean, he's not even enough scum on your tile in your bathroom. He's a piece of scum, and he's garbage. And not only that, I mean, I know he loves his gig on MSNBC, you know, where he pretends to be, you know, the moral majority and the smartest man in the room. Comb your hair, you jigaboo. You look like a fool. Comb your goddamn hair. Get a haircut.
Nappy-headed bastard.
Nappy-headed. Who do you think you are? You look like Whoopi Goldberg's brother, you foolish idiot. Fool-ass Negro. Fool-ass Negro. And he loves getting in front of those white liberals and tell them how smart I am. Look, they put me on the air to talk about the black stuff. That's
tell
Torrey.
Secrets.
Yeah.
He tells secrets to Martha.
Hey, look, Lawrence O'Donnell, the whitest man in the room, has me and Al Sharpton sitting on his show talking about black stuff. Because they know that we're the smartest people when it comes to black stuff. That's Torrey for you.
Yeah.
I love being in front of the liberals because they care about us black people. That's why they only bring us in when we need to talk about black issues. Because if they don't, we'll call them racist. Don't you like my nappy fro? I still hate him.
I so hate Dvorak.
He gets on my nerve.
Give me some background on this foolish Negro. Completely foolish.
How does he spell his name?
I think it's T-O-U.
Tor with an E, right?
Yes, Tor with an E. Because and it's got that little, you know, that little hyphen.
Little accent.
Yeah, the little accent. Because he's Negro in French. Oh,
he's Negro in French?
I don't know if he's French. He reminds me of this guy I used to know back in the day who, his name is Mark. But then in the 90s, when everything was so Euro cool, he decided to change his name and spell it with a Q.
M-A-R-Q-U-E?
No. M-A-R-Q. That's what he was called. That's his name, Mark with a Q. That's what his girlfriend Amanda used to call him. Have you seen Mark with a Q?
No.
I used to love it. Tora, you fool ass Negro.
With a P, but not Mark with a Q.
No, he was Mark with a Q. Ugh. He drove me up the wall with that garbage. Anyway, we'll take a break when we come back. If you haven't heard this piece, I'm playing it during Black History Month. It is Why Black History Month Should Be No More. It's a guy by the name of Alfonso on Zone Nation. You can look him up. We'll be back at Teresa on the Radio.
I wish Black History Month was over already. And I don't mean over at the end of the month. I wish Black History Month was over for all time. I know. I just spoke heresy in the eyes of liberals and Afrocentrics. I don't care. And I can hear them now accusing me of making a statement I made so I can get approval and acknowledgement from white folks. Really? Aren't you the ones who demand to have a month set aside so white folks can acknowledge you? You're the ones desperate for recognition from white folks. You want these white Democrats to give you reparations and affirmative action and whatnot. I don't need any of these things you demand from white folks. I don't need a feel-good month set aside for me. I'm happy about being black all year long. I celebrate being an American all year long. I don't need a month set aside for me to boost my self-esteem. As the saying goes, Jesus already thinks I'm to die for. Why would I celebrate Black History Month when it would be racist to have a White History Month? I mean, to be fair, American history is pretty much taught to us as white history. So we really don't need a White History Month. But the reason why we don't know that much about black history is because the school system is dominated by the Democrat Party, who has a history of segregating black people. So it only makes sense that they would segregate a month for black people. And in this special month, Democrats oversee what you know about black history. And one thing they don't want you to know about is the true relationship of blacks and Republicans and blacks as Republicans. Along with Black History Month, I do not like having channels like BET, when it would be seen as racist to have WET. But again, to be fair, television has always been white entertainment television. Hollywood is totally racist, and they're dependent on keeping people in a certain box so as to maintain their entertainment formula. White liberal mecca Comedy Central calls themselves throwing black folks a bone with their new comedy show called Key & Peele. Now, I get called a sellout while Key & Peele happily take money to promote the so-called black stereotype on Comedy Central. Look, y'all, I totally understand that we have some cultural differences, and it's a beautiful thing about our country worth celebrating. But giving a culture special treatment leads to resentment, not celebration. Y'all, there are many black heroes to celebrate in American history. I'm not saying you shouldn't acknowledge and learn about them. I'm saying that the black community has settled for a month as if it were a tribal reservation on a calendar. Or even worse, it's a February plantation where the Democrats milk their stock for voter loyalty. I'm Alfonso Rachel for Zone Nation, where we conservative blacks don't celebrate black history once a year. We make American history every day.
Are you talking to me?
No.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said
Nada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
Welcome back, folks. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on ReeseOnTheRadio.com and on Blog Talk Radio. Number 347-308-8701. And, of course, we're going to talk about the tragic passing of Whitney Houston over the weekend. And I think the reason why this story's dominated every airwave around or imaginable is because it's not just a sudden death, it's a shocking death. And you don't really expect that to happen when it does. It wasn't like we didn't know that she had gone through some tragedy, you know, drug use and all that stuff. I think the last real interview anybody had seen of her was on Access Hollywood when she was talking about having just starred in and produced in the remake of the movie Sparkle with Justin Sparks. That was the last known interview that I knew of her. She talked a little bit about that. She had talked a little bit about her demons. So a lot of people didn't know what was going on. Recently, I've just seen, in fact, on Yahoo.com, they have, which I found amazing. Shows you how out of touch Yahoo News is. Yahoo had a picture of Ray J, R&B singer, reality show, Kim Kardashian's last smut. On Yahoo, they have a picture of Ray J, and it said on the caption, the last man in Whitney's life. And they were talking about, you know, as if people didn't know who he was. I guess mainstream America didn't know who he was. So, you know, apparently, you know, he was involved with her, as many people know. I was shocked to even learn that she was.
Ray J was involved with her?
Oh, yeah, for a little while now. Oh, yeah, for a little while.
You gotta be kidding me, you didn't know that.
This is the reason why it's such a shock, because no one had really been following Whitney since the last debacle. You know what I mean? Since the interview with Oprah, nobody really cared about Whitney like that. They knew that she had been booed, you know, in Australia, that she had been booed in England for her performance. They know the crap that she was getting, you know, for her singing ability. So nobody really knew anything about her personal life. People knew that she broke up with Bobby Brown. Those stories they knew about. She didn't, they didn't, and who's Ray J, for crying out loud? You know, nobody knows and or cares.
I thought Ray J ended up with somebody he was on his reality show with.
No.
I mean, she was very much his senior.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I don't know. Mary?
Yes.
After the Kim Kardashian tape came out, all the senior citizens flocked to him. Starting with Little Kim.
I do remember that.
He dumped Little Kim for Whitney.
He dumped Little Kim for Whitney?
Yeah, I'd have done the same.
Well, I would have too. I mean, Little Kim is just ridiculous.
That being said, there's all of these stories that are coming out about Whitney Houston. And just last night, as Whitney Houston's body was being flown into Teterboro Airport in New Jersey, Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC had Al Sharpton and Torre, a writer for Rolling Stone, a failed television host, and now a political analyst on MSNBC, the extremely left-wing MSNBC, and said something that I found troubling, and I want to get you guys' opinion about it. Because I don't know if this is necessarily true for quote-unquote black artists only. And I hate the fact that Tory always finds a way to inject racism in his narrative.
Well, you cannot judge a fall if you don't know how hard the road is.
That's right.
Tore, talk to us about where she fits in our musical history.
Well, let me say this, because I had...
Or say anything you want.
Well, I had some things that I wanted to say, and then the things that Kelly Price said at the top of the show raised the level of television discourse far beyond what we normally get. So Kelly forced me to rethink everything that I was going to talk about. And one of the things that I was getting at was that yesterday at the Grammys, it was subdued. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about doing soul searching. And I had a talk with Questlove from The Roots, who talked about the soul searching that he's doing. And he talked about there's an epidemic of death that's tragic among prematurely dying massive black singers. You know, Michael Jackson was just 50. Now Whitney at 48. Heavy D was 44. Nate Dogg was 41. Why are so many of these people dying early? And he talked about that there's an extraordinary pressure and stress on them to continue to succeed year after year because it is embarrassing to fall. But they also have a fear of going back to poverty, which would seem strange to people.
I don't want to interrupt. Okay. I just want to point out that on the video screen with you right now is the plane landing at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey that is carrying the body of Whitney Houston on a private aircraft. But go ahead, Troy.
You know, there's an irrational fear of poverty in a lot of people who even have reached this level of fame and success that they will fall back to that. So you wonder why is a Michael Jackson and some other people dealing with sedatives, because they're dealing with an extraordinary amount of stress and anxiety. And Questlove said something to me that was really deep that he was a little nervous to say, but then he said it anyway. For a Whitney Houston, would you rather be this, what she is, or Melba Moore? And that's not to slight Melba anyway, but Melba Moore was a singer who was very popular, very successful, and then ended up back in the project through several mistakes, some no fault of her own. And for an artist who chases success and achieves success, the level of desire is so high that to fall back to that, where you came from, and to be embarrassed by other people taking your spot is massively painful. I mean, you think about the level that a Michael Jordan gets to, you don't think about that same thing with these artists. And Whitney Houston definitely had it because she got to the top, because she had to be at the top. She started at the top. And, you know, I mean, just there's a significant emotional pain that goes through with a lot of this.
Now, where should I start?
Slap the face, man.
I know. I'm with you there, Jay. I'm with you there. But see, I always wonder where I should start when I critique somebody as foolish as this nappy-headed fool.
Can I say something before you critique him?
Go for it.
Being a journalist, you need to check your facts, especially if you're going to be on something as prominent as MSNBC, which happens to be a very huge station.
Yeah, their ratings.
Of the amount
ratings,
of liberals that watch.
Their ratings don't suggest it, but yeah, I get your point. It is an NBC-owned, a universal group owned network. So yes,
right.
I get your point. But what were you saying about the facts?
Melba Moore, he brings her up and talks about her being back in a project.
There you go.
As though Melba Moore had a drug problem and lost it all. Melba Moore was robbed by her husband, who was her manager.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? And I'm glad you brought up Melba Moore, because that's exactly where I was going to go. And this is where Torre really misses the mark, and this is why I know that he's a idiot, a failure as a writer and as a journalist. There is one thing that Melba Moore has that Whitney Houston will never have.
And that's oxygen. Melba's still alive.
Yeah.
Whitney's dead, stupid ass.
So would you rather be Whitney or Melba Moore?
That's right. Would you rather be Whitney or Melba Moore right now?
That's
what I ask any one of you.
Well, I'm glad that she is alive so that hopefully she'll hear this and come back.
Yeah, exactly. What I would say to Melba Moore is like, nobody wants to be Whitney right now. Whitney's dead. Okay? I would rather be an alive Whitney than a dead Whitney. But if I were to look at a better place, I bet you Melba Moore, although living in the projects, is probably living a more sound life than what Whitney Houston was living.
And furthermore,
if Melba Moore has Jesus and her family, Melba Moore's got royalty and wealth in spades.
And furthermore, Melba's on tour, damn it.
Is she? Give me some background on Melba Moore. Let's get some background on Melba Moore. We got a Melba Moore song we can put on?
Yeah, we'll get a Melba Moore song. But you know what?
Song
it's foolish. I mean, she hasn't lived in the projects in years.
Is he saying that she's gone back to the projects recently, or did he say she went back to the projects after
he said to end up in the projects in embarrassment.
Right, but I mean, she was saying that she was embarrassed because she no longer had the fame anymore. But my argument would be, what is this whole thing that he's trying to say about Heavy D and Nate Dogg, that these people were desperate not to end up back in the ghetto?
Well, Heavy D didn't die.
Heavy D died because he was on painkillers, but he was suffering from pneumonia. But he wasn't trying to use substances to quell something that was internal. Heavy D's death was unfortunate and random. Nate Dogg's had other issues. Gerald Levert, who I looked up today, also died. He was on painkillers, but he wasn't abusing them. He had an acute reaction to them. I looked at all the black people
I wouldn't say an acute reaction. If he died.
No, I mean, fine. He had a fatal reaction to the prescriptions that he was taking. In fact, the only drug he was taking that was in question was he was taking an anti-anxiety pill, Gerald Levert.
And that happens a lot with
right, but he wasn't out
drugs.
Trying to medicate himself or over-medicate himself. And Gerald Levert, his drug problems happened way before. He was even what? I think it was right around the time he was in that group Levert. And just afterwards, he had cleaned up his life. So he wasn't down some road. He was still working. He was still touring. In fact, he was on tour the week he died. So it wasn't like Gerald Levert. And I looked up all of these black entertainers and tried to figure out like how many of them saying, why are all these black entertainers dying? For him to try to equate Heavy D and Nate Dogg's death, and who was the other person that he mentioned? JC, do you know who the other person was he mentioned?
Oh, no, I stopped listening. He pissed me off.
But I know,
tuned him out. I'm sorry.
I know he said Nate Dogg. I know he said Heavy D. And there was another person who just died recently who tried to associate with that. But I looked up all these people. The only person that I saw who was comparative to Whitney Houston, who died by their own hands by overusing. I'm talking about black artists who used drugs that caused their own death, was Whitney Houston and Jimi Hendrix. Michael Jackson. Yeah, he mentioned Michael Jackson, too. That was the other one. So Michael Jackson, that was on his own. He should not have taken propofol. It was a dangerous drug to take. Whitney Houston, dangerous cocktail to be taken while you're drinking. Jimi Hendrix, same thing. Choked on his own vomit. Taking drugs. Who else do you got? So his whole theory is bogus. Everything about his theory is bogus. So that's why I'm offended by it. Why would he even turn around and try to make this statement? And again, trying to get this quote-unquote black perspective. Come on.
But he's talking to white folks.
That's my point.
They don't know any better.
Exactly.
But he's trying, trying to create a narrative that black people are somewhat special and or different. If you really pay attention to what he's saying how black people's issues are somewhat different. That how their addictions are different. They're fighting. Poverty is such, and now I can clearly see what he's trying to say. Poverty is such a weight on society that black people, when they achieve success, so desperately don't want to go back there. They will do anything to suppress that anxiety. That's what he's saying, if you listen
to him. Well, you cannot judge a fall if you don't know how hard the road is.
That's right.
Teray, talk to us about where she fits our musical history.
Well, let me say this because I had
or say anything you want.
Well, I had some things that I wanted to say, and then the things that Kelly Price said at the top of the show raised the level of television discourse far beyond what we normally get. So Kelly forced me to rethink everything that I was going to talk about. And one of the things that I was getting at was that yesterday at the Grammys, it was subdued. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about doing soul searching. And I had a talk with Questlove from The Roots, who talked about the soul searching that he's doing. And he talked about there's an epidemic of death that's tragic among prematurely dying massive black singers. You know, Michael Jackson was just 50. Now Whitney at 48. Heavy D was 44. Nate Dogg was 41. Why are so many of these people dying early? And he talked about that there's an extraordinary pressure and stress on them to continue to succeed year after year because it is embarrassing to fall. But they also have a fear of going back to poverty, which would seem strange to people.
I don't want to interrupt. I just want to point out that on the video screen with you right now is the plane landing at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey that is carrying the body of Whitney Houston on a private aircraft. But go ahead, Troy.
You know, there's an irrational fear of poverty in a lot of people who even have reached this level of fame and success that they will fall back to that. So you wonder why is a Michael Jackson and some other people dealing with sedatives, because they're dealing with an extraordinary amount of stress and anxiety. And Questlove said something to me that was really deep that he was a little nervous to say, but then he said it anyway. For a Whitney Houston, would you rather be this, what she is, or Melba Moore? And that's not to slight Melba anyway, but Melba Moore was a singer who was very popular, very successful, and then ended up back in the project through several mistakes, some no fault of her own. And for an artist who chases success and achieves success, the level of desire is so high that to fall back to that, where you came from, and to be embarrassed by other people taking your spot is massively painful. I mean,
let me get to this point here. Mary just said something off the air that it was so poignant. And it's funny because usually I pay such close attention to it, and then when I lose it and someone else makes the point, I go, I had literally, Mary, you just opened my eyes. I went, holy crap, his point is completely moot. Mary, say what you just said to me.
I mean, when was Whitney Houston ever even a victim of poverty or in poverty that she would be doing something so crazy to not go back to poverty?
Yeah, when's she going back to? Her mother was Sissy Houston.
Exactly. So when was she ever even? What does she know about poverty?
Yeah.
She doesn't know anything about poverty.
So Tori's whole claim is moot because Tori's saying that there's this insurmountable pressure for black artists not to go back into poverty, that they use these drugs and they behave in such a way because they're anxiety ridden that they don't want to go back into poverty. How does Whitney Houston fall into that category?
I can see how Michael
even
Jackson
even so, we've all seen the Temptations movie. I'm sure we've all seen that movie 1,000 times. You can't go by VH1 without it being on.
No, actually, I've never seen a Temptations movie. And also, if the Five Heartbeats comes on, I will trash my television. So I don't watch either one of those. But go on.
Well, let me tell you something that Otis was stating to to Tall Black. I can't think of his name. But anyways, he had said something in a movie that made so much sense, and that is that even though at one point they didn't have a contract, they were the Temptations without a contract because they had left Motown and they had left MCA, and they were without a contract. They could make money singing old golden oldies.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need record label permission to tour and sing. Record labels get very little or none of that tour money to begin with.
That's the whole thing. You're absolutely right. Tour money, that in fact, most artists will tell you today that you don't get anything from the record label and record sales. You get probably a quarter to 35 to maybe even 50 cents for every CD that's sold. If you're lucky, the CD sells for $14, $15. You get a quarter, if you're lucky, off every CD sold. Your money is made on tour.
Exactly. That's where your money is made, in front of an audience.
Yeah, but Whitney Houston, look, the bottom line with her is that Tori makes this point to try to say that we're having some sort of epidemic of young people or young black artists who are afraid to go back to poverty. How the hell does Whitney Houston fit into that category?
And in this age, in this age right here, you don't even need a band. A lot of artists do tape tours where they take the instrumentals on the road with them from a concert.
Absolutely. Play them on a tape deck. That's exactly what they do. I mean, and again, that's why I can't stand this guy, Tori, and he makes absolutely No sense. James Montgomery is with us. What's up, Kool-Aid Man?
Hey, hey. How's so, everybody?
Good to see you.
We're chilling, man. You didn't get to hear most of this because you called in the half of it. Torre, who's this, you know, this knucklehead writer from Rolling Stone, who's kind of a failed TV personality, is suggesting that there's an epidemic of African Americans who are so desperate not to go back into poverty, that they're anxiety-ridden and they're drug-taking. And the names that he used were Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, Nate Dogg, and Heavy D. Yeah.
And Mel Moore.
Michael hasn't
Michael
seen
Jackson.
Poverty since he was 8.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Michael ain't been – right. Why would Michael Jackson be afraid of poverty? He's never known poverty. The guy always complains he never had a childhood, you know? It's an invalid statement by Torrey, but he's trying to say that these people – Heavy D lived in Mount Vernon, New York. You know, which at the time that he was born was a middle-class company. He came to America from Jamaica. But he wasn't poverty-stricken. He never talks about poverty. In fact, he never talked about it.
Heavy D's dancer.
Which one?
What, the one that ended up falling off the stage and
that's
dying.
That's Trouble T. Roy.
His father, when I was – I told this story earlier this week, the latter part of last week, when I was in detention center, his father was actually my history teacher.
Oh, okay.
Which was very interesting. But I've been to Mount Vernon, and I mean, I wouldn't say it's necessarily poverty-stricken, but
– it's middle class. It's a middle-class community. It's probably a little worse off now than it was then, though.
No, but I'm saying then. I was there then. I haven't been there recently. I was there then.
But then it was a middle-class community. I would not suggest that Heavy D was afraid of going back to poverty. Heavy D had a pretty good career, and he had a long-lasting career. And we're talking about outside of just rapping. He had a very, I would say, impressive career.
He was an actor, producer.
Yeah, and by the time that all of these people passed away, even if they had come from some type of poverty-stricken background, by the time that these people passed away, I mean, it had been so long since they had ever seen any of that that it was probably almost forgotten.
Yeah, but I think his analogy about Melba Moore. Hey, James, if I asked you right now, would you rather be Melba Moore or Whitney Houston? Which one would you be?
Well, compared to where Whitney is right now, I'd say Melba Moore.
I would too.
That's my point.
I think we're agreement.
And Torre is making this claim that, you know, Melba Moore, she was in the, you know, who would you, Questlove said, who would you rather be, Whitney, you know, Whitney now or Melba Moore? And then sit up there and say, no, I would rather be Whitney. And I'm sitting up there going, I don't know who you're talking about. Whitney does not breathe air. Melba does. And
let's not jinx her.
Well, no, we've already had three. You know, when
I don't believe this theory.
But if you pay attention to it, so my theory is not my theory, but it just seems to happen like this: is when you get one person passes away, normally you have two more to come right behind.
I don't
them
believe
at some
this.
Point.
So you're saying
but
because
pay
we
attention
have,
to it. If you pay attention to it.
Who are the three we had?
Forward,
Whitney, Don Cornelius.
Don Cornelius, and who was the? There was one more.
Who died just before Don Cornelius?
Etta James.
Thank you.
No.
It was Etta James.
And David Peaston. Etta four. James. That's Shuster theory.
No. David Peaston doesn't count.
Why he doesn't count? He died the day after Don Cornelius.
It was
but
Etta
he
James,
count.
Whitney Houston.
How can he
not
count?
Because he was barely a celebrity or a star.
And they started with Etta, they went to Don, and then they went to Whitney.
I mean, nobody cared about David Peaston until he died. I mean, when you
Etta only survived singing Golden Oldies.
But Etta James is iconic, man. There was a movie about the damn woman.
Well, that's because of her career and her own struggle with substance abuse and trying to find her father and
listen
that
to
crap.
Me. David Peaston wouldn't even get a movie on the Hallmark Channel about his life, okay? He wouldn't. He was one of the first artists on Showtime at the Apollo Records. Why would we even see this guy? There's nothing about him. other than the fact those who know him and remember him, I know him and I remember him, and I know
I'd
he
audition.
Did. What's that?
Anyway. I'd audition.
Well, nonetheless, I mean, it's David Pinkston, but I don't think there were any other people that were, I don't believe in this whole three people deal.
Okay, so now we have Reese saying this live on radio. Let's all keep an eye out for the next round of three.
We'll see if there's a next round of three. I don't think
there
that's going to happen anyway.
Because it happened with Gerald LaVert.
Right.
It happens with everybody.
I don't think so. Anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, folks, there are new numbers in the Stop and Frisk program that came out today. The numbers are alarming, not just because of let me just put it to you this way. We're going to get a breakdown of the people who live in the New York City area. We're going to break them down by race, and then we're going to break down what the Stop and Frisk numbers are. Based on that, you will see the disparity, the out-and-out racism that's clearly, clearly taking place in New York City. One of the most liberal cities in New York, in the country.
In America.
Yeah.
Tried a lot of cars, Ford Pinto, the Pontiac Fiero, but the Volt was the first car that truly got me excited and looking into the prospect of buying American again. Yeah, I've heard they're catching on fire in some cases, but I found that the fire really helps me get to my destination faster for fear of my life. Also, people really move out of the way when giant hunks of metal are hurtling towards them. Probably the one thing that sold me on the car. I'm really proud of what GM has been able to accomplish by working with the Obama administration. They've proven that in America, you can make it in any business, as long as you have unlimited financial resources and the backing of the United States government. I don't know about you, but I think that's more than worth the couple $100,000 it costs taxpayers every time somebody buys one of these suckers. I'm sorry, do you smell something?
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a zero on the old risker scale.
Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th.
New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward.
Participation may vary.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative, rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun. Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
And we're back. It's Reese on the Radio live right here on Blog Talk Radio in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. I want to know what Barack Obama got for Michelle Obama for Valentine's Day. I'm very interested in that. Telling everybody else, don't forget, man. Don't blow it. I ain't got nothing against that. You know, all right, so. Of course, you heard my story about, you know, the Valentine's Day card, as I talked about earlier. But a story that has been very, very near and dear to me is in New York City. It's the Stop and Frisk program. And if I may, I'd like to read you an article about Christine Quinn, who's the Speaker of the House in New York City. It says, New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, shown in May with Michael Bloomberg, said police were falling short in several areas. Quote, I am concerned that a rift has developed between the police department and New Yorkers, particularly New Yorkers of color. Much of this division is centered around stop, question, and frisk practices. In her letter, Ms. Quinn, a potential 2013 mayoral candidate, defended stop and frisk as a as a viable and effective crime fighting tool, as she has in the past. And she noted that the 51% decrease in murders during the past decade could be attributed at least in part to stop and frisk. Still, Ms. Quinn wrote, young men of color consistently report that they are repeatedly stopped, and some of those encounters result in accusations of excessive force. Allegations that officers are pressured to meet stop and frisk quotas are also troubling. The department needs to ensure quotas play no role, according to a letter. In the letter, the speaker calls for improvements in police training, supervision, discipline, monitoring, and transparency. Paul Brown, the NYPD's chief spokesman, said Commissioner Kelly is happy to review suggestions from Speaker Quinn, especially in this instance where she recognizes the dramatic murder reduction in the last decade and the role police strategies played in it. A spokesman for Mayor Mike Bloomberg echoed Mr. Brown's statement and said the administration will review Ms. Quinn's proposal. Since Mr. Bloomberg took office a decade ago, the number of stop and frisks has surged, rising to 601,055 in 2010. As I've always mentioned here, in 2009, that number was 575,000. According to the report, that stop and frisk in 2002 was 97,296. The year end statistics for 2011 aren't yet available, but officials expect the numbers to exceed 600,000. Now, this is where it becomes the most troubling. JC, if you could, for me, I'm not going to read the breakdown here, but do you think real quick you could get me a population number by race in the New York City area? Is that possible? And let me put JC back on line. JC, do you think you can get that number real quick?
I'm on it.
Okay. Now, the reason why I'm asking for that information and why it's so important is because the stop and frisk number is very important in relation to race. Ms. Quinn does make a valid point. Yes, there are more people of color who are dealing with the stop and frisk program. So I want to say this before we get into the numbers from the 2010 data, is that we all know that African Americans in New York City, and I'm going to take a wild guess here, that the white population in New York City, in the New York City area, is probably somewhere around 8 to 9 million. It's probably somewhere around that number, 8 to 9 million. I am going to take a guess that of that 8 to 9 million people living in the New York City area, that 27, I'm probably going real high there. I'll go 23 to 25% African American. I'm going to go that high. The Latino number may match it. It might even be a little lower, somewhere around 20%. And of course, Asian and you know, thereafter, of course, those numbers get lower. JC, you let me know when it is that you have it. Just come on the air, because I'm not going to give the numbers yet until you get there. But there, I know, is a huge disparity, because when you hear these numbers, you'll realize that there's clearly something wrong going on within the numbers for stop and frisk. We know why they're doing it. We know what neighborhoods they're doing it in. But I want to know why it's important. I want to know why it's not important for African-American leaders to confront this issue the way that they do so many other issues when it involves race, especially race when it comes to unemployment, race when it comes to, education, why this number would not be alarming to them. Let me just read the rest of it before we read the number. Anyway, Mr. Brown said that the data also shows that stops comport to race with victim crime reports. Too many people are being stopped and frisked, and the way they're talked to, the way they're handled. This is not the courtesy, professionalism, and respect that the NYPD seems to fashion itself. And that's according to Councilman Robert Jackson of Manhattan.
We don't even believe that all of it is being documented. Mayor Bloomberg has long credited Stop and Frisk with keeping guns off the streets and preventing crime. In October of last year, the mayor said police officers generally do a good job carrying out this policy. And he dismissed critics who said the NYPD could keep bringing the crime down without using the tactic. Ms. Quinn wrote Tuesday that she would support legislation requiring the NYPD to report to the council on the departmental audits of stop and frisk activities. This is one of the other recommendations she made. She said the department should ensure that all officers, regardless of rank, receive an ongoing training in cultural sensitivity and are familiar with the department's written racial profile policy. She also says the NYPD should comprehensively review data to create an early warning system to flag officers and precincts where out of the ordinary stop and frisk activity is taking place. Absent extraordinary circumstances, the NYPD should consider an improper stop and frisk a serious matter, and violations shouldn't be punished with just a slap on the wrist. The speaker's letter generated praise from the civic organizations, including the New York City Civil Liberties Union and a number of elected officials. We need to reform because a system that promotes or permits discriminatory justice benefits no one, including the police officers who work hard every day in our communities. And that was the council member, Jermaine Williams of Brooklyn. JC, do we get any luck on the population? Hello. Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't have you up. Say that again.
I'm looking at 2008. I'm trying to get something a little more current.
No, that's fine. 2008 is a pretty good number. We'll deal with that.
Okay.
Go for it. What do you have as far as white population in New York City?
44.6%.
44.6%. All right, that's a considerable number. What about African Americans or black, for that matter?
They're actually third at 25.1.
They're third at 25.1.
Yes.
I hit the target, didn't I? I hit right on the target. They were third. Who was number two?
Hispanic and Latino.
What was their number?
27.5.
And, okay, so whites, we have over 40. African-Americans, 25. Latinos were number two.
Well, no, the whites are 44.6.
44.6, I apologize. Okay, so let me get to what the numbers are since we have those. The vast majority of the people involved in the stop and frisk are black and Latino. In 2010 example, 54% of the people who were stopped were black. 33% of those stopped were Latino. 9% were white.
Wow.
That's 9%.
That is not good.
No. Yeah. Yet, Mayor Bloomberg says that what he's doing is stopping crime in high-risk areas, and that crime is down because of it. James, is Mayor Bloomberg saying that black neighborhoods are high crime areas?
Of course he is.
Is he telling the truth?
Of course he's not. No. I mean, again, it's supposed to say that it's supposed to leave the impression that these quote unquote high crime areas are only in black and Latino neighborhoods, which is untrue. So for that to be, 9% and yet crime is going down, but only 9% of whites are being stopped and frisked, what is the impression does that leave you with?
Well, for me, it leaves the impression that blacks are being targeted. I think larger question. Probably a broader question. Broader question is,
is, okay, so you live in Harlem versus Chelsea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you live in Chelsea and crime in Chelsea is, let's say there are 100 murders a year in Chelsea. And let's say that there are 100 murders in Harlem a year. Why wouldn't you have the same amount of stop and frisk in Chelsea that you do in Harlem?
Because it's Chelsea.
And why? What? I'm just saying. What do you mean? Because it's Chelsea. Chelsea is a better
Chelsea
area.
Is, well, yeah. Well, it's not that it's a better area.
Okay.
It's that it's more white than it is black.
Mm-hmm. Is this a form of approved racism?
Approved.
Well,
I would say it's an end run around profiling. It's profiling without saying it's profiling.
It's yeah, you're using the guise. The guise that's being used here in this case is that you live in a high crime area. So we have to stop people who are walking down the street to make sure that they don't have weapons on them.
But if there's 100 murders in Chelsea, and there's the same 100 murders in Harlem, they're both high crime.
Fair enough.
It's more, I feel like, it's more of a, it doesn't really even have to do anything about race, but then again, it does. It's more about financial. Because we all know that it's more expensive to live in Chelsea than it is to live in Harlem.
You wouldn't be in Chelsea if you couldn't afford to be there.
And if you can afford to be there, then they care more about protecting you than they do if you live in Harlem on Section 8.
So, fine. I get what it is that you're saying, but here's my question. Don't you think that people who live in the Harlem area who have probably experienced a lot of drug dealing, gang members, violence, wouldn't they welcome more of these stop and frisks happening in the street to improve the safety conditions there?
No.
Why wouldn't you?
Not if you feel like it's being done because you're profiling us.
Well, I mean, okay.
Not if you feel like it's being done in an unjust way, no.
But if you don't have a gun on you, if you don't have a weapon on you, if you don't have drugs on you, just keep it moving, right?
No.
You're not willing. I mean, come on.
What are you hiding?
No, I'm just saying, but come on. Exactly. What are you hiding? I mean, think about it. You go on a plane to fly over, you know, to California, or you get on a plane, you fly to Albuquerque, wherever it is that you're going, and you got to get searched. Even though you're not a terrorist, you have to get searched in.
Yeah, but you expect that in an airport. You don't expect that in your neighborhood walking to the bodega to get a 40.
Well, if you've got nothing to hide,
if you've got nothing to hide, comply.
No. Well, if you've got nothing to hide,
it's annoying. It's annoying, but it's going to be the price that you're going to pay to make your neighborhood safer.
Okay, but JC, do you have to pay that price because you live in the neighborhood that you live in? How come the people in Chelsea don't have to pay that price because they're paying a different price?
Well, they're paying a better price to live in their communities than the people in Harlem are paying for theirs. This is what happens when you live in a community that lives off the government dole. That means that the government can do anything they want to you, because you live off them. You live off
them. Because the folks down in Chelsea,
not everyone in that community is living off the government dole.
So
that, okay, now you're saying that you're saying that there are whole communities that are on the government dole.
Well, but there are, Jamie. You can't.
Are they a majority of the people who are living on a government dole in those communities? Sure, they are. If you listen to Torre tells you right off the bat that blacks are poor in this country. You know, they are poor. They're the biggest poor. They're the biggest poverty group there is. And they're the ones who need the most assistance. Their education is down. These poor communities not only need to be told what to eat, told what to think, told what to watch, told what to learn. They're the same people who have to be told how to live, shown how to live. They need to be controlled.
But you know what? It's not so much that they need to be controlled. It's the fact that they don't have the means to control their own lives.
Oh, they don't have the means to control themselves.
And regardless of what the reason is on why they don't have those means, that is what the problem
James,
is.
James, I know you don't agree with that. You don't believe these people need someone to tell them.
No, I don't believe that they need someone to tell them what to do either.
But do they need to be controlled?
But the fact is, that if you are living on the dole of the government or of those of us that work and pay taxes, then you don't have
much say.
You don't have much say. You don't have the rights that maybe somebody in Chelsea has because
they pay a heavy price for their freedom.
Exactly.
James?
What price are they paying?
Higher rent, higher taxes.
Higher rent, higher taxes. Okay.
Yeah,
higher rent, higher taxes.
And James, I'm not saying that I agree with that. I'm just saying that that's
but,
what it
no,
is.
That sounds like a fair argument to me. They pay higher taxes. They make better wages, right? That's one. They make better wages. They clearly make more money. So they pay for higher rents because they're in an exclusive neighborhood. They pay higher taxes because they make it more money. Why wouldn't they? I think we lost him. He's going to come back. They're the ones paying the most. So, you know, they sacrifice the most with their own money. Why wouldn't they?
Well, they're sacrificing with money that they're working for.
This is exactly
the difference.
So
they're, you know, you can't tell somebody that's
so
working.
The least they should be is harassed, right?
It's just pretty much like with politics. They're only going to cater to the ones that they actually can use and need.
Well, yeah, the ones that's going to, you know, secure votes.
Yeah.
You know, that's
and secure revenue.
absolutely. But they're going to give them more freedom. They're going to, you know, if you aren't an active member of society and you're living off the dole, we can treat you any way we want to. I think that's exactly what Mayor Bloomberg is saying. I think that's what Ray Kelly's saying.
Well, that's what a lot of people say. I mean, if whether you agree with it or not, that's the way the world works. And this is another reason why I don't understand why it's like this race war, you know, blacks mm-hmm. and whites and this. It has nothing to do with what color you are. It has to do with how much money you have in your bank account. And
Very
when people
true.
Can start waking up and realizing that even if I'm white and you're black, and you have $10 in your bank account, and I have $10 in my bank account, or you're negative $10 in your bank account, negative $10 in your bank account, it's not going to matter. My color is not going to make me more liquid. It
yeah,
doesn't
but I'm
work
more,
that way.
But you don't think that there's a possibility that I can be more relevant? We both have the same amount of money in our bank accounts, right? You got 10, I got 10 in my bank account. You don't think that I can be more relevant than you, even though we have the same thing? You and I are the same age. We have the same amount of money in our bank account. We both work a decent job. It makes the same wage. You don't think that I can be more relevant than you, or you can be more relevant than me in a grand scheme?
Do I believe that? Oh, definitely.
And how does
but
that happen?
But I don't believe that the government sees it that way.
Oh, I'm certain.
Or that
you don't think so?
No.
I'm certain that they do. Sure, it sure does.
How?
Being an active member of society. I think that you and I...
But we're both active members in society.
If we... No, what active members in society in what capacity? I mean, just because you
we're
don't...
We're both working class.
So?
We both make the same amount of money.
Right.
We both have the same amount of money in our bank account.
What if you do community work that I don't do?
What if what I do, I only take care of myself? I don't go out and vote. I just take care of my family. I pay my taxes on time. You don't think that you have more clout than I do if you're an active member of society. You go out and vote. You're a part of a political action committee.
Okay, of course then I have more clout because they'll benefit more off of me
than they
will off of you.
You're part of a community watch group.
Yes.
You know, you're part of a community center or whatever it is.
I have a bigger voice than you do.
Right, of course. Exactly, you have a bigger voice. That is exactly what it is that I'm talking about.
Of course,
well,
then I would be more
relevant. In this particular case, the people in Chelsea, those people in Chelsea are quicker or faster to jump up and protest for things that they're not getting in their community. If they have...
Of course they are, because they're going out. And not saying that people in Harlem are not going out and working for what they need or working for what they have, because there are plenty of people in Harlem that are doing that.
Right.
But those people that are making a bigger monetary contribution have more of a say.
Well, they just have more of a say, but actually they're willing to fight for more of what they have.
Of course, because they're going out and
making that money and
like
spending
dogs.
More money. Exactly. They're making their money.
To do what they have to do.
Right. If there was a predator in their neighborhood, they would actively go challenge the local administration to do something about it.
They would come up with a committee.
Right.
They would do something.
Again, this is in places like Harlem where you don't see that happening. In Harlem,
you probably do see it happening, but you just don't see it.
Do you see Harlem or any of these poor black communities rallying or asking the police department to get rid of the gangs?
You and I may not see it.
Oh, that doesn't happen.
No, Reese, and that's something that I kind of where we differ a little bit. You may not see it happening because it's not publicized like you would see it in Chelsea.
What you don't? No. Okay. If indeed there are voices out there pressuring the police to get rid of gangs, to get rid of drug dealers, whatever it is in their communities, if there's an active voice out there, if there is.
Actually, I will tell you a little story.
Please.
Okay. So some years ago, and you can look this up online, you will see my photo. I was in the news. I was on the news. Every major news station there is.
Really?
There was.
Look this up, JC.
Oh, God.
Please look this up. I want to find this.
Oh, my God. Okay, so there was – I lived in a neighborhood that was somewhat poverty-stricken. In Fredericksburg, there was a couple that lured this Chinese food delivery driver to deliver Chinese food to an abandoned building, which was right across the street from
it happens all the time. Well, I can't say all the time, but it happens very often.
And the intent, I assume, was to rob this gentleman. Well, they lured him to this abandoned apartment complex that I could literally see from my hallway window.
Mm-hmm.
He was then physically assaulted and abducted. They abducted him. They stole his car. They were caught on videotape buying cases of beer or 12 packs of beer with his credit cards.
Time period?
This was in 2000 and...
Come on, get that year accurate.
Okay, if you go to Fredericks, go to the Freelance Star. Go to freelancestar.com and just plug in, you know, search articles or whatever, plug in Mary Pennington. Plug in, yeah, you know what to plug in. So plug my name in and you should be able to find it. Okay. So anyway, this was the son of a locally owned Chinese food delivery place. He was abducted. It ended up turning out, this was like on a Thursday night or something like that. And he ended up, they ended up killing the guy. They ended up bludgeoning him to death. They took his credit card. After they purchased cigarettes and beer at the local Shell station on the corner, the girl drove the car to the local grocery store. The boyfriend went in, bought a not a steak knife, but like a butcher knife or whatever. With the Chinese food delivery guys, I wish I could remember his name because I feel so bad. Anyway, it ended up coming out like on that Sunday that they found his body in the car. They found his body out in a field. These birds had like eaten his ears off.
Oh, okay, hold on.
Very, very sad.
All right. Let's take a break. I want to hear the rest of this story. JC, see if you can find this article. We come back. We'll do the top of the hour, and we'll hear the rest of this story. Mary, in the news, get out of here. I want to hear the rest of this. When we come back, yeah, community activist. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll be right back.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little man. It was quite a soul. And everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And we're back at Streets on the Radio Live on blogtalkradio.com. And why did we lose our good friend Montgomery there? Where the heck is Kool-Aid Man? We seem to have lost him. I'm going to see if I can get him on the phone and find out what the heck happened to him. Just cut out. Just hung up the phone. He probably had a family emergency. I don't know what's going on with that. But anyway. So, Mary, finish, please. I'm dying to hear this story. So, at last you left off. You said that they had killed the poor delivery guy.
Yeah, so like that, I kept watching the news, and that Sunday, my mom actually called me and said, "Mary, they found the guy,
mm-hmm.
and he's dead." So what happened was is that the gentleman went into the grocery store, purchased a knife. They drove the car around the back of the grocery store. They bludgeoned him to death in the trunk of his car.
Wow.
Because not only did they abduct him, but they stole his vehicle. They stole his
car. Did they abandon the vehicle?
They did abandon the vehicle. But prior to abandoning the vehicle, they went on a shopping spree to all other but Walmart.
Wow.
Don't even get it. You were on a shopping spree at the Walmart. And I'll never forget, I went out to dinner with a friend of mine at this, you know, the same night that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I dropped my friend off after dinner right at the corner, almost at the corner of where this delivery driver's parents own their restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like I was right there in the thick of things. I went home. The Mexican food that we ate was so horrific. I wasn't feeling good. I fell asleep on the couch, and I wake up to the crime lab being outside of my window.
Wow.
And I'm like, what is going on? Never could figure out what was going on. You know, watch the whole scene take place. Watch them, like, hose the blood down from where he was assaulted at the scene or whatever. And the family was outside. It was like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. The neighborhood wasn't the safest neighborhood to live in. It was very drug ridden. There were a lot of drug dealers. I had lived in the neighborhood for like 5 years at the time. Never had been bothered by anybody. Minded my business. That's just who I was. But I knew everybody that lived in the neighborhood by face because I always paid attention. So anyway, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, and these family members are outside looking for these
Asian or Chinese people, wherever they were from, they were just out there searching for their family member. And I was so heartbroken that I went outside and I said to them, you know, what is going on? Are you looking for someone? You know, what is happening? Yes, you know, we're looking for our cousin. We're looking for our brother. We're looking for our son, you know. So I'm like, okay, this is not the safest neighborhood to be in at this time of the morning. Let me show you where I think potentially this person could be if, you know, something like this was to take place where I would probably look for my family member. So we did. We went out with flashlights. We actually didn't even have flashlights. We all used our cell phone lights.
Mm-hmm.
So we went looking around. We didn't find anything. We couldn't find any clues. There was nothing. That Sunday, my mother called me and told me that they found him and he was passed away. So I was keeping up with the story in the local newspaper online, and all these people were, you know, it was all negativity. So I just said, you know what, enough with the negativity. Let's just, you know, I'll be the spokesperson, for a lack of better words. We need to do a candlelight vigil and show that this is not something that we accept in my neighborhood. So that got a lot of attention. I went to several different places. The Christian is so funny because I went to the Christian bookstore to see if they would like donate candles and do all this stuff. Well, they didn't. So I ended up collecting money from my job, and a couple of other people got involved that I met online. So we all put our money together. We purchased everything that we needed to do, set up a time. The newspaper contacted me. We put this whole vigil together. It was beautiful, touching. So I will never forget that all these people came from all these different neighborhoods, from all these neighboring Stafford County, from, you know, Spotsylvania County. But my point of doing it was to say, let our neighborhood get together and say, this is not something that's acceptable for us in this neighborhood. We don't accept this.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the people that came, it was like no one from my neighborhood even came out of their house.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. And I remember this one young lady, she came out with her young child, and she was just kind of standing by herself, you know, in the middle of the block. And I introduced myself to her. I told her who I was, you know, that I lived right here. She said, you know, she's seen me before in the neighborhood. I asked her what her name was. You know, she lived around the corner. And it was like she almost didn't want to, she was out there, but she didn't want to get involved. And it was so sad to me that most of the people, everybody that came was just from outer areas. Nobody in the
neighborhood. No one in that whole community who was a part of that tragedy wanted to even be a part of it. So it's sort of like tunnel vision. They just shut their eyes to it and didn't really care.
And come to find out, they were actually, and it turned out to be, we had a great turnout. We ended up, you know, collecting a lot of money for this kid to be taken back to his country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they had to take his body back to his country to be buried or whatever it is that the Buddhists do. His sister ended up showing up. All these dominoes actually showed up. They all came up in a line together, all these delivery drivers, people got together. So,
wow.
Anyway, it was a beautiful, beautiful turnout. So, but the people, it was so sad to me.
It's okay to get emotional.
And it makes me come to tears because the people in the neighborhood just didn't, these people that were in our neighborhood that brought these people to, that brought this delivery driver to this abandoned building, they didn't belong there. It was like, why did you choose our neighborhood to do this in? You know, why would you do that? Why would you put our neighborhood
probably
out
because
like
they
that?
Didn't think the neighborhood would care. And
no one in the neighborhood cared.
They didn't. And that probably what hurt
me.
You even. Yeah, that probably
and
hurt that, you
it
even
was
more.
Heartbreaking. It was absolutely
well,
heartbreaking.
Well, clearly you didn't, well, I don't want to say that in a harsh way, but just clearly you didn't belong there. You didn't belong there because they, you know, people like that don't care. Jason, do you have any luck with finding Mary's audio or whatever? Because transfer it to me because I'm going to blow it up. I'm going to blow it up.
Well, no, I couldn't find the audio, but, wow, I'm
touched and moved. We have a saint amongst us. So I was reading the story.
Oh, that's Fredericks- sweet of him to say. He said
and the Fredericksburg Star.
Uh-huh.
It says how she had organized the vigil.
That's sweet, Mary.
It was very touching, and, you know, I just...
No, that's a good idea, man. That's a good thing.
Yeah, Mary, why you loving?
Mary, why you loving? What's that about? No, I appreciate
that. But the whole point of that was that, like, I know we talked about people in Harlem.
Yeah, in those communities, why don't they get involved?
It was like, why don't you want to get involved when you have the opportunity? It's right there in your face. What is the problem? But it turned out that they were angry at me. All these people that lived in the neighborhood ended up being angry with me because a few years prior to that, on my birthday, there was a gentleman that was shot. He had just been released from jail. He owed somebody some money. They executed him, and I was there. I saw him laying in a pool of his own blood. He looked like he was sleeping in the alley of his parents' home.
Wow.
And no one, even my own friends that were friends with me said, you know, oh, this white woman, you want to come and organize this candlelight vigil. You know, nobody did anything for so-and-so. When he got shot and killed, he was executed. They made him put his arms, they made him get on his knees, put his arms behind his back as if he was handcuffed, and shot him in his head at close range. Killed him right there.
So, again, that bitterness, though, but somebody could have stepped up and done a vigil for that guy. They didn't do it.
And I was fresh in the neighborhood. So that kind of scared the crap
out of me. I can understand that. I can see that bitterness. But, no, it's a very, very good story. Hey, James, you got a party going on in the background?
What a turnout. I found a video.
You did? Find a video.
Yeah, I found a video. I found some video. But, that was a hell of a turnout.
Wasn't it? It was
really
phenomenal.
Oh, that was beautiful, man.
Oh, you got to make sure we see that.
If you can play what we sang, though, it was absolutely amazing, and it brings me to tears.
Well, let's see if
we
can get that audio. We'll play it. We'll play it tomorrow. We'll definitely play it tomorrow. Okay, JC just sent me the link, so I'm actually happy that I have that now. I'm gonna check this out when we take a break. There's something that I wanted to bring up. Let me ask you guys a question. Everybody who's here. Let me ask you a question. James, do you know what's best for your child when it comes to education?
When it comes to education? I think I know what's best for my child in regards to anything.
Are you a
home? Who knows your child better than you do?
Okay. So, James, you are saying right now that you know what's best for your child when it comes to education.
Yeah.
So you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Jason, how about you? No, I'm sorry, James. Go ahead. Well, finish what you were saying.
No.
Okay. JC, how about you? Do you know what's best when it comes to your child or children when it comes to education?
No.
You don't?
No.
You do not know what's best for your child when it comes to education.
No, I mean, both my kids have graduated high school. Both of them started college, but I don't think that me personally, I could have taken them there.
You what?
I don't think that I personally could have taken them there.
No. I'm not talking about taking them there. I'm asking, do you know what it is that your child needs to learn in order to achieve?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so you know what your child needs when it comes to education. Mary?
Okay, I'll walk with you there.
Mary?
If I had kids, I would think that I would know what is best for them, or what at least I thought was best for them. Yeah,
okay.
I would say that.
All right, fine. Let me just play this audio from a school official who says that none of you know crap.
We do, you know, educators go through education for a reason. They are the people who know best about how to serve children. that's not necessarily true of an individual resident. I'm not saying they don't want the best for their children, but they may not know what actually is best from an education standpoint.
Wow. Parents don't know what's best for their child.
I said they may want what's best for their child. They may not know.
I want to play it again.
We do, you know, educators go through education for a reason. They are the people who know best about how to serve children. That's not necessarily true of an individual resident. I'm not saying they don't want the best for their children, but they may not know what actually is best from an education standpoint.
Wow. Parents don't know what's best for their child.
I said they may want what's best for their child. They may not know.
So apparently you don't know what's best for your child. The person who knows what's best for your child is the educator.
But she talks like we haven't been through the education system.
Yeah. James, that's a school official speaking to a council board in Michigan saying that the individual doesn't know what's best for her child. Doesn't know. We educators, we know what's best for your child. You as a parent, you don't know, and you hear the councilman respond. Wow. Parent doesn't know what's best for their child? And she says, no. They may want the best for their child, but they don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of agree with her.
Oh,
what?
I kind of agree with her. I wouldn't have said it the way she said it.
Do you agree with her on an uneducated level?
I said I kind of.
Explain to me where you. Now, this woman isn't. In no way is she categorizing a certain group of people. She is not talking about uneducated parents. She is not talking about educated parents. She is talking about all parents.
If you know what's best for your child and your education, then homeschool them.
Whoa, but that's true. Homeschooling, I mean, come on. But think about early development, JC.
That's where I have a problem.
Okay, what about early development? You teach your kid the ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, not school.
Right,
and she's saying, hey, let me check you guys at the door. I went and got a degree on educating your child. You ain't getting no degree. You just had the kid. I know how to educate your kid. Just have the kid and drop them off at my school at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'll handle the learning stuff. You just get dinner ready when the little whippersnapper brings his ass home. I got the learning.
And don't call me when they got homework.
Exactly.
You can't help them.
Exactly. Are you kidding me? Come on, Jamie. This is crazy.
This is nuts. But it's just, it goes along with the elitism that is prevalent here. If you've spent a lot of money going through school and you have a degree or a PhD or whatever kind of letters you want to put next to your name, you all of a sudden know more than anyone else.
Come on, baby.
But the thing, all right. But frankly, I've always had a problem with that because there's nothing that person could have learned in their school, even though they spent thousands of dollars and learned it from a book. But there's nothing that you could have learned that I can't learn from my public library.
Oh, Jamie.
So,
Jamie,
you know.
Oh, my God. So, I'm telling you, you have no idea what you are doing for me right now. You have no idea. You have no idea. Hold on. You are joining the dark side. You are joining the dark side. You said elitist. You said that there are elitists out there who are the educated, the smartest. Who are the educated, the smart ones. You're telling me the ones who think that they know better than us. Who are the elitists, James?
The ones who think they know better.
Come on.
First and foremost, again, how you can even say that you know more about someone else's child in any way, shape, or form. It's just...
James.
I don't get it.
Doesn't this go hand in hand that they know that they know what it is that you should eat to be healthy? Doesn't this go hand in hand on what it is that you should do in order to be, what health care you should have? Doesn't this go hand in hand with telling you what it is that you can watch on television, what you should read? They're taking books out of your school. Huck Finn, no longer allowed. These elitists. What it is that you can listen to on the radio. Remember the censorship trials by Al and Tipper Gore, who now put the parental advisory stickers on your music? Do you remember that? These are the elitists who know better than you, the citizen.
They're not the only ones, man. And please don't try to turn this around that it's only Democrats and liberals. Please. Because
James,
everyone's doing it.
James, you know he's going to do
that. They're the only
ones. Oh, please.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist.
Oh, my God.
The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor. The party of segregation. The party of the KKK. They're the racist.
You know it, damn it. Come on, tell
no,
the truth.
No.
Those elitists, yep. That liberal, that woman sat there on that panel, and that black man responded. That black man couldn't believe. And that was a black man that said, wow, the parents don't know what's best for their children. Come on, man. This is what the public school system thinks of you.
Educators go through education for a reason. They are the people who know best about how to serve children. That's not necessarily true of an individual resident. I'm not saying they don't want the best for their children, but they may not know what actually is best from an education standpoint.
Listen to this black man.
Wow.
Parents don't know what's best for their child.
I said they may want what's best for their child. They may not know.
That's right. They may not know. You had the kid, but you don't know crap.
But this is the thing. Parents, we all, and I say we all, like I have children, but I don't, but I can only imagine what I would want for my child if I was a parent. So yes, we all want the best for the child. We may not necessarily understand, but those are our children, and that's why, because if we're talking about my child, then it's a different story than if we're talking about your child, or if we're talking about somebody else's child.
But wait a minute, you were educated. You went to school, right?
Yeah.
So you're educated.
Yeah.
How are you not more educated than her? You had the child. How are you not more educated on your own child than she is?
And I'm not saying that. I'm not disputing that. But
come on, James, give me something.
But as your own child, you know, as being a father. Well, no, I'm sorry, Reese. Maybe you don't know. Maybe someone else does, because we all know how Reese is.
What's that supposed
to mean?
I'm
sorry, that was a bad statement.
What was that mean?
I retract that. Okay, James.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
As you being a parent, I mean, we all have, is it bias or unbiased?
You're biased.
Okay, you have a biased opinion because it's your kid. It's your, it means more to you than just something about somebody else's kid. So,
well, I have a bias when it comes to – I would have a bias
don't.
When it comes to – no. What I'm saying is that I tell my children – I've told my children that, you know, they get to dictate, you know, what it is that – how it is that they perceive information, that they have to be critical thinkers. They have to question authority. I'm smart enough to know that if my kid were to go to school and be taught something – at school and they come to me and I hear, like, in basic conversation, if I'm talking to, let's say I'm having breakfast with one of the kids and the kids talk and I'm having a conversation with somebody else and I'm talking about history or social studies, whatever the case may be. And my teacher turned around and goes, oh, man, I didn't learn that in school. My teacher and I, we were just talking about that. My teacher says that such and such and such. And I look at my child and I go, well, I don't know what it is your teacher's teaching you, but that's not true. And here's the evidence to show that. This is blah, 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 blah. Your teacher's teaching you the wrong thing. For this woman to say, and we know this about the school system, that they indoctrinate our children to believe certain things, to hate war, to believe in global warming, you know, to teach them that there's a gay history in America. Come on, man. Jerry Brown in California is saying that the schools need to teach kids about homosexuals who contributed to American history.
That's not ridiculous.
And these are the people who were supposed to be smarter than you.
Well, but these are the same people that are telling stories about how many oranges the slaves
picked. Do slaves pick in a week? How many whippings did Frederick Douglass get?
Where was this lady from?
And again,
was she from the Georgia school board?
You're going to tell me that these people aren't those liberal elites that I keep bringing up and you keep trying to protect?
And I keep trying to protect. Okay. What I'm saying is, I'm saying this, and as I've said each and every time, I said, if you're going to get after one, get after them all. Don't just pick one group and claim that the whole problem is their fault.
Fine, then I'll take responsibility. I'll take responsibility for one thing. By the way, the neighborhood that had those questions for those black kids about how many oranges did the slaves pick and how many times did Frederick Douglass get beaten, I have to tell you this. I looked it up. That town overwhelmingly voted for John McCain in the 2008 election.
And you should see his face.
That was a lie. That was a lie.
I'm not just saying. That's okay. The truth is, they were, you know, yes, they voted overwhelmingly for John McCain. But that doesn't mean that those kids were not taught by liberals.
Oh, OMG, James. Come
that
on,
was a lie.
Jump in Kool-Aid. Well.
I'm still wondering why I'm the Kool-Aid man when he's obviously drinking the whole company.
I'm not drinking.
He's drinking something other than Kool-Aid.
I am not drinking the Kool-Aid.
They spiked something.
His Kool-Aid has been spiked.
I don't know what's wrong with you people. I have no idea. I'm just making a point.
Well,
okay.
Whatever it's your Kool-Aid or your Perrier, whatever you want, man, you need to slow down.
Yeah.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist. The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor. The party of segregation. The party of the KKK. They're the racist.
They are the racist, damn it. That's a fact.
Okay.
Well, anyway, I was making my point. Anyway, when we come back, we'll take a damn break. I hate it when I have to reveal the truth. You see, give me some props.
Yeah, when the truth hurts you, Reese.
Yeah, well, no.
And what you stand for.
Well, the point is that at least I tell the truth, okay? I gave you that information. You never, ever knew anything about the fact that that town that put that test score out.
I didn't need you to tell me.
No, but you know what, James? This is why we didn't even need to know whether it was liberals,
Conservatives
or whatever. Oh, it was wrong. The point was, it was wrong. Whoever's end it was on, it was wrong.
Booyah. We'll be back. It's on the radio. We'll stop talking. And our next champion.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
And welcome back. It's Reese on the Radio in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., just footsteps from my man Barack Hussein Obama. ReeseOnTheRadio.com is the website to go check out. And we know the passing of Whitney Houston is taking place, and we've talked about that until the cows have come home. And
She will be laid to rest on Saturday in a private ceremony in the Newark, New Jersey area where she was pretty much born and bred. And, you know, we'll say our final farewells. You know, we've done our tribute. There's nothing more to say to that. To recap the show today, of course, we talked about everything from, of course, the greatest Valentine's Day story ever told, which I told earlier. School officials, the Stop and Frisk program that we talked about that, of course. And why am I forgetting most of the stuff that we talked about today? We had a whole litany of things that we brought up today. Now, this was a pretty packed show. We talked about Torre and this ridiculous knucklehead who's a writer over at Rolling Stone and a political analyst over at MSNBC, or as many people refer to him as MS or BSNBC. A lot of people call them over there. And
cheerleaders.
Say again?
Cheerleaders.
Oh, and we talked about the cheerleaders. By the way, which is, you know, that was actually fun, the cheerleaders that we talked about.
Oh, of course it was, because you guys get to gang up on the one girl that's here.
Well, we don't gang up on you. Come on.
You must have your back on the bed, and you're gonna give me that. Why don't you think about something? I don't like the way this chair is. Why don't we do it this way?
Yeah, so the cheerleader coach who called her cheerleaders highfalutin heifers has been fired after one of the cheerleaders' fathers told the cheerleaders to record the volatile comments that were made to cheerleaders by the coach. They got rid of her, again, proving my point that, you know, girls cannot take harsh criticism. So that's why the young lady was fired from her job, which was awful. There was something I wanted to bring up. Larry Elder, I'm not certain that you guys are familiar with him. Larry Elder is they call him the Sage of South Central, and told a story about Whitney Houston, going back to her. And I didn't know that this was happening at all. And JC appeared to remember this better than I did, because I didn't know it was happening. So any information would have been better than the information that I had. That at a point, Whitney Houston was booed because they thought that she was too white or did white music and her music lacked rhythm. I saw earlier today a video from In Living Color, called Rhythmless Nation, where Whitney Houston was mocked for doing music that lacked rhythm, I guess, is the best way to put it. The music was very cookie cutter, and that Clive Davis was trying to remove her from the black community and make her accessible to whites. She had accessible music, not any urban or cultural music, and the black community sort of shunned her. And Larry Elder's take on that was that was maybe part of the reason why she married somebody like Bobby Brown. In fact, the way he put it, let me paraphrase how he put it in his statement, was at the same Soul Train Music Awards that she was booed, she had already won like 11 American Music Awards. She had won 3 Grammys. She gets on stage, the audience there boos her. And then Bobby Brown, who had a hit record out at the time, he gets on stage and he's bumping and grinding and the kids go wild. And Whitney saw that and saw what it was that the community was responding to, and may have fell into that gap that many people do when they want to be accepted by their own, when they call them a sellout or an Uncle Tom. And then when she married Bobby Brown, that the African-American community then accepted her. We have to be honest about this, and we played this song yesterday. the song that she did with Bobby Brown. Let me just scroll down here so I can get it. Why am I not finding it? I'm not seeing it here on my list, and I know it's here. Forgive me for a second, because I probably have to scroll up. Here it is, this song here. That is to give Whitney's music didn't sound like that at any particular time until she got involved with Bobby Brown. There was really no hipness to it, and a lot of the songs that she sang were very, you know, I mean, you know the songs that she did, you know, they sounded like this.
This is a horrible rendition.
What I find interesting about that is that, you know, the same things that they criticized Whitney Houston for are the same things that they ran after MC Hammer about, were the same things that they ran after Vanilla Ice about, the same things that they ran after Young MC about, that their music was cookie cutter and was geared towards a broader audience or a mainstream audience. But nowadays, everyone is doing that mainstream sort of music to appeal to a broader audience, and it's no longer frowned upon. There was an Afrocentricity during that time in the late 80s, early 90s, or even, you know, I'd say mid-80s. You know, you remember the Black Medallions, No Gold era of the, you know, Native Tongues, you know, Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, Jungle Brothers. Though, you know, that sort of having a Whitney Houston being so broadly accepted that people took umbrage with that, saying that she wasn't being authentic enough. And do you guys agree with that in any way? I mean, am I barking up the wrong tree here?
I don't agree with the fact that music is music. If you love music, I don't care what your skin color is. Music is music. It shouldn't matter whether you're, I mean, as a white woman, I loved Whitney Houston at all of her times. It wasn't, it had nothing to do with whether she was out there with pop music or out there with whatever music. It was her voice. If you appreciate music for what music really is, then you can appreciate someone like Whitney Houston, regardless of what point in her career she was. It just doesn't even make any sense to me.
James, do you believe any of the criticism that she received back in that time that her music wasn't black enough? Do you accept that?
No, actually not. No, it was more. It wasn't the fact that it wasn't black enough. It was whitewashed. Not that it wasn't black.
Okay,
wait a minute.
Why would you white-wash Jamie?
Okay. May I finish?
Yeah, no.
Yes, but I'm just asking you a question.
I asked you whether any of that criticism was fair, and then you used the term whitewash. So, no offense, but I think that's enough to create a kind of storm of criticism.
Okay. Especially right. From the white woman.
But go on.
Well, look, what we were saying, well, back then, it was the fact that there was a disparity in our music or R&B and what MTV was playing. And the people were upset, were getting upset that here were these all these other artists who were doing, you know, a music that was selling. And yet, when it came down to those awards,
there was almost no black faces.
Yeah, and but then, did you call Lionel Richie whitewashed? I mean, Lionel Richie came from the Commodores and was writing songs for Kenny Rogers, for crying out loud. I mean, I mean, come on, All Night Long, Dancing on the Ceiling. You know, I mean, those songs were really, look at how many American Music Awards Lionel Richie won.
Even his newer song that I let you listen to, that you had no idea.
I had no idea it was him, but
if anybody knows that Lionel Richie made a song in the last few years, it was probably about 2009, I want to say, that he came out with this record. I can't remember the name of it, but I have it on my iPod. It was a great record. And I let Reese listen to it, and he had no idea that I was like, you don't know who this is?
He didn't even sound like him, James. It didn't even sound like him. But that's what I'm saying. If Lionel Richie received accolades for his music, he was never, ever referred to as whitewashed. But then I can also say Lionel Richie has never, ever been invited to – how many, JC, please, if you can look this up, how many Soul Train Music Awards has Lionel Richie won? Or was Soul Train Music Awards even around while Lionel Richie had a record out?
Well, of course it was.
Okay. I don't remember him.
No, it was, whether he was invited or he wasn't, or whether he was nominated or he wasn't, it was still around.
I thought Lionel Richie was very, very mainstream. But he didn't get.
He was mainstream.
Yeah, but I don't think he was. I don't think that he was criticized for it. Is what I meant to say. Well, I don't think he was criticized. Go ahead, James.
I think because of the fact that he was in the Commodore, it wasn't such a push to make her such candy coated
raindrop.
Well, do you think what it was? Do you think because he came from the Commodores, which was an R&B band, and then became mainstream, like he progressed? He started as R&B and very urban, so to speak, and then progressed into mainstream. Well, Whitney Houston first started out as mainstream and then tried to bring it home, and people were saying, what are you doing here? You don't even live here.
Okay, well,
never ever.
Let's not forget. Yeah, I do believe it had a lot to do with that as well. But this was Whitney Houston was a person who was like, okay, look, I'm just trying to sing. All right, yeah. it was the people. I'm sure she had her ideas about a song she wanted to do, but she was managed by people that had a certain mindset, and at that point in time. Especially when she first came out, she didn't really have much control over that.
Oh, I agree there. I agree that she probably didn't have a lot of control of her own music. But then I look at stories like Mariah Carey, who also started in the same path that Whitney Houston did, with very, very pop accessible, mainstream accessible music, and then eventually became very urban. You know, after leaving her record label, you know, she becomes very, very R&B and street. And
but notice.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
But notice it was after she left her record label.
Right. So then
you don't
she,
think that had something to do with it?
Yeah, you believe that she sort of got an appeal that just said, oh, she got out of bondage.
Yeah, she got out from under.
wait. Can I say this to you all? You should all see the smile on Reese's face as he says that, because we are sitting here broadcasting live together. You should see the smile on
well,
his face.
When I
as
said
he
bondage,
that.
Right? That's what I think when I hear that. But go on.
Mm.
So she gets out of bondage. She can now she's free. She's like, you know, she can do everything in the world. Tommy's gone, and now she can break off the shackles, and she can show what she's really about.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget that Whitney also went, especially when she was dealing with, just before she was dealing with Bobby. No, this was during the backlash about her dealing with Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
She went and she said, look, I know I've been painted, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, these were her words. You know, I know I was painted as America's sweetheart. But people didn't know that she grew up in, like, Jersey or something, and she practically called herself Hood. You know, she practically called herself Ghetto. And it was like, just because I'd had this persona made for me in the music business, don't get it wrong.
Don't get it twisted. Say it how it is.
I don't know. I think Larry Elder makes a valid point that, you know, she felt so removed and her audience made her feel so removed that a lot of that pressure made her want to be a part of it. If you're not a strong enough person to deal who it is that you are and how it is that you made your niche in the music business, that if you're not confident enough, that you'll fall heavily to those influences.
Okay, this is my point. You also have to think about who these women's audiences were from the get-go.
Right.
Their audiences were women. And women we look at other things. We don't look at where you came from. It's how you can relate to us. And if you're singing something that can relate to us or tribulations that we've been through in our lives, nothing else matters to us.
Yeah, but I don't hear black women singing, I want to dance with somebody. They never sing that.
Which black women you know.
I don't know what black women you're talking about. But we were listening to this at work today again for the second day in a row.
I don't see black women singing "All Want to Dance with Somebody." I see them singing "The Greatest Love of All" because it's a George Benson record. Of course, they're singing. You know, I will always love you.
No, you're out of touch with that one.
Oh, no. Yeah, listen, you are. Don't sing. "All I Want to Dance with Somebody" is a real pop record, and if you saw that video, you know, it was like, it was all Technicolor.
But that song was more than just about it. Whitney Houston was never about where she came from, who she was, what ethnicity she came from. Whitney Houston was just Whitney Houston, and women loved her because we loved her, because she talked about stuff that was relevant to what we were going through, either as young women or...
Yeah, but you know what? I think that black people... Listen to me. I think that black people deal with that song, "Oh, I Want to Dance with Somebody," the same way Caribbean people deal with Billy Ocean singing, "Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car."
Stop it.
No. But you know what? At that time when Whitney was out with that music... That was during a time where R&B had really, really taken a backseat to rap.
Okay.
And hip-hop. There really wasn't any R&B artists of that time. I mean, look at artists like Chaka Khan, who was serious hardcore R&B, and she had the title track to the movie Breakin'.
"I Feel For You"?
Which was hugely crossover. Yeah.
What song was that?
I feel for you.
Okay, now hold on. Let me tell you something about Chaka Khan and that Breakin' song. Okay? That Breakin' song, hot. If you heard anything by Rufus and Chaka Khan, that was no departure. Okay?
But I still don't think
that was no departure.
Not from Rufus and Chaka Khan. Nope, not at all. No departure.
That was from "Tell Me Something Good."
No departure.
Wow.
No departure.
And also at "How Will I Know," even back then, and "I Want to Dance with Somebody." We're talking about a time during the British invasion.
Yeah, you're talking about that whole Simple Minds, OMD, you know, the Kinks.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And I mean, the only hip hop station or R&B station you had in New York City at that time was what, either Hot 97 or BLS?
No, Hot 97 wasn't even existing at that time. So,
okay. Now, I know here in Connecticut, we didn't have, our only R&B station was an AM station.
Really?
And then you had the college stations.
Wow.
And at that time, BLS was actually playing more than KISS was.
Yeah,
if you go back, BLS was actually featuring a lot more of Mariah or Whitney at that time than KISS ever did.
Well, KISS FM is a very, very strong R&B network. So, I mean, the station. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. But I
mean, who was her R&B counterpart at that time, Anita Baker.
But was
yeah.
Are you suggesting at any time that Whitney Houston during the "Oh, I Want to Dance with Somebody" that she was R&B? Because I disagree.
No, she wasn't R&B. No. I, you know, I think I kind of like her answer best. I seen her whole answer. Well, what was the problem? What's going on with you in the Soul Train Music Awards? And it's like, well, he says that I understand that, you know, they have a problem with you singing what is called too white. He says, well, what is too white? You're just singing with the voice that God gave you.
Yeah, but they told her that she lacked rhythm. They were saying that the song
but
she that
she didn't,
was...
But the thing is, Reese, she didn't lack
no,
rhythm.
She
oh, I know.
No.
I didn't
about
that.
Her was...
I totally agree. But they're saying that the music that she... In other words, they people then who criticized her...
It was
her
just that
knew,
that music touched
back
every,
then, it was a lot more of about her dancing than her music.
No, actually, that was Mariah Carey.
No, Mariah Carey got a lot of crap about it.
Okay.
I can't agree with you, let me tell you this, James.
I think what it was then... Back then, when Whitney Houston came out, very few people knew that the record label controlled your image. A lot of people didn't know that. It was a lot of years later when I realized how much the record label had control over the music that came out. And one of the things that struck me as odd is I remember talking to an artist at one time.
Almost
and said,
every artist.
Yeah, every artist. But I remember one particular artist had told me that in an interview that we had on the air, I asked him, you know, how many songs are on this album? And the artist says, well, there are only 12. I produced 30.
Right.
But the record label said they hated half of them. And these were the songs that they chose that they thought were marketable. And it always bothered me that there's an audience out there that'll never hear those songs that Whitney probably produced that will never come out. Because
the
record label said...
And that's the same thing that they did with Michael Jackson,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
The reason why Tupac still comes out with new albums.
True.
No, that's because Tupac is still alive.
Yeah, okay, stop it. No, yes,
him and Biggie.
No, but you know what?
You
hear it all the time, Reese. I'll give you a perfect example.
Yeah.
Tommy Boy Records.
Yeah.
Everyone who has left Tommy Boy Records has dogged Tommy Boy Records. And they've always said it's because Tommy Boy wouldn't let them be them. It was always what Tommy Boy wanted to release.
Right, and the image they wanted to put out. I told you that. I don't know if I told you this story. When I was working with a record label in New York, and there was a group coming out, and the group had the word "boys" in their name, and there was a marketing team of people upstairs in a conference room, putting the album together for the group, and the people in the room, none of them sing on a track. Hadn't produced one of the songs. It was all corporate executives, and they had decided that the word "boys" was going to be spelled with a Z. And
we all know who
and
that
I'm
was.
Sitting up here looking. No, it's not Heavy D and the Boys or anything like that.
I know it's not.
But they had decided that the group was going to be called Boys with a Z, and I'm looking in there, and it's not one member of the group is sitting in there. And they have decided that that's what the label's going to put out. We got to use the letter Z because the letter Z is edgy.
I agree with that.
And
I bet you two and men were in there. Somewhere.
No. Boys to Men was one of the groups, yes.
Or the boys, Dial My Heart.
You see, BBD.
But, you know, if you don't have control, that's what it is that happened. And I know Whitney Houston... How old was Whitney Houston when she started? I mean, for crying out loud,
she was
19.
She was 8 when she started singing in choir.
16.
In
the videos of her that everyone has been showing when she was 16 at the same church that she'll have her funeral at. She was 16 then, but she was 19 when she started. She had no control over the music that she was putting out.
If you ever do first, the Merv Griffin. On the Merv Griffin Show. By Clive Davis.
Introduced on the Merv Griffin Show?
That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Look at Tiger Woods was introduced as a 3-year-old boy on a Michael Douglas show.
Michael Douglas.
Yes, Mike Douglas. You remember the clumps?
Mike Douglas. You know Mike Douglas. Well, you make me mine.
Yeah, exactly. Makes me moist. All right, anyway, that's our show for today. Tomorrow, new day, new time. Well, not a new time, but new day, same time. You know, of course, all the subjects and all the topics, the news and views. It's Reese on the Radio. We will be back. I'll be back in New York tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting from there, or at least I will be. Everybody else is broadcasting from their respective homes. And we'll be back on the radio and be with each and every one of you. So we will say goodbye. And we'll say goodbye with Whitney Houston, because after this, I'm not talking about her anymore. I'm pretty much done.
That's a lie.
No, we're not talking about her anymore.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, we'll talk about the love affair. Whitney and Bobby, we'll see you tomorrow.
Dedicated to those who don't believe in real love, especially our love. Hey, yo, LA, drop it on us.